Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Thursday afternoon. Very big show we have for you today.
Sit down, Charlotte.
We've got a lot of stuff to get into. A lot of big stories, a lot of videos to cover, and a really great interview with Kevin DeAnna in the third hour. But we'll begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 18th of December, 2025. More photos from Epstein's estate released by House Democrats as deadline to release DOJ files looms. House Oversight Committee Democrats released five photos from Jeffrey Epstein's estate Thursday, including a Ukrainian passport, Noam Chomsky with Epstein, Bill Gates with a redacted woman, and a foot with a Lolita quote written on it. It's a bunch of creepy crap, obviously. The committee received more than 95,000 images last week, while Epstein's estate lawyers limited review to material from January 1st, 1990 through August 19th, 2019. Among the items is a released screenshot of a text exchange describing sending girls with, quote, 18-year-old and a Shenzhen checkmark visible, while Democrats on the House Oversight Committee redacted many details and noted unclear provenance. So we'll look into that a little bit, but Epstein continues to be a major topic of conversation. I saw some interesting speculation that the interview with Susie Wiles in Vanity Fair was at least in part designed to soften the blow when and if Trump's name shows up in the Epstein files. I thought that was an interesting take on it. Meanwhile, Trump moves to end access to gender-related care for minors, is how New York Times puts it. Yeah, Trump bans genital mutilation for mentally ill children, might be another way of saying it. The federal government on Thursday acted to put an end to gender-related care for minors across the nation, threatening to pull federal funding from any holiday that offered such treatment. The move reflects a laser-like focus on the issue by President Trump, who in his first days in office called gender trans treatments for minors a stain on our nation's history. We'll show you some statements about that, some speeches about that. That shows that at least in one aspect of society, we are returning to sanity, and it's fantastic to see. And I happen to wonder how much of everything that we're going to talk about today is a consequence of Trump's cratering poll numbers, as he seems like they're actually getting the message finally of like, oh, we need to actually do things. We need actual tangible changes to occur. So transgenderism is one of them. Here's another. Trump administration aims to strip more foreign-born Americans of citizenship. The Trump administration plans to ramp up efforts to strip some naturalized Americans of their citizenship, according to internal guidance obtained by the New York Times, marking an aggressive new phase in President Trump's immigration crackdown. The guidance issued on Tuesday to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services field offices asks that they supply Office of Immigration Litigation with 1 to 200 denaturalization cases per month in the 2026 fiscal year. So again, good to see Trump responding to the demands of his base that it's not just illegal immigration, it's legal immigration as well that is ruining our country. Meanwhile, in response to, or as a follow-up, I guess, to the Bondi Beach massacre, Australian counterterrorism unit rams car, arrests 5 men suspected of planning violence. 4 days after the Bondi Beach terror attack in Australia, a counterterrorism unit stopped what appeared to be a vehicle carrying 5 Middle Eastern men in Liverpool, Sydney, who were allegedly heading towards the Bondi Beach area. They apparently were armed and arrested ahead of attempting to commit another terror attack. We'll again get back to what Australia is doing as a consequence of the Bondi Beach terror attack. And, of course, it's completely off the mark and, in fact, in a total inversion of what would be a logical and sensible response, reaction to it. Meanwhile, Trump announces $1,776 dollar warrior dividend payout for military personnel, which, again, I like to see. Something about this reminds me of, I don't know, Rome. I like the idea of the emperor paying bonuses to the army. Maybe it will make them more loyal to him. Maybe that will be useful in the future. I don't know. But that was from Trump's announcement last night, which turned out to be basically a miniaturized Trump rally, not a declaration of war against Venezuela, which we like to see.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me.
Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure here. It tastes great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the sea moss and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.
With your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
All right, welcome back, folks. One thing that we didn't mention in our daily dispatch that is happening right now is that there's a war on the EU being waged by farmers. And the imagery out of this is absolutely incredible. It's been a fairly common thing over the last several years. The EU or the national governments of Europe institute some policy that is utterly ridiculous and asinine and is directly designed and created and employed specifically to destroy the profession of farming. And if you wonder why they would do that and why they have all of these various excuses to do it, and none of them are actually apply or actually matter, you have to think a little bit wider scope. Why would a government want to shut down its people's ability to feed itself? Seems ridiculous. But you have to understand that at the same time, methods of manufacturing food in gigantic warehouses, you know, creating meat in labs is exploding. And essentially they want a world that is programmable, like a computer, like a machine. None of this having to depend on nature stuff, none of this human beings taking advantage of the prosperity and bounty of the earth. They want everything dictated by them and controlled by them. And if you don't understand that, if you don't understand how all of these various asinine policies all comply to the same general trend of destroying humanity, destroying our ability to support ourselves, increasing our dependency on a centralized technocratic system, it all actually makes perfect sense and has absolutely nothing to do with whatever excuses they bring to bear to justify their outrageous positions. Sometimes it's about climate change. Sometimes it's about nitrogen in the soil. Sometimes they're blaming it on God only knows what else. None of it really matters. None of it's true. We have lots of different videos we can play here. Let's go to some of the other ones, because about 15 different videos of the chaos in Brussels at this EU farmer protest. And we can go ahead and just roll through some of these, because it's pretty astonishing. They're spraying bull crap on everybody, literally. They're spraying manure on all the police. They're threatening to ram tractors into police. And, of course, we showed just earlier this week. And, guys, play some of the B-roll in the background of all those videos that I got of the EU protests. We talked a little bit earlier this week where it was the French guy who was bleeding from his eye talking about the way that the French government – was destroying their family farms, killing every single cow if just one of them got this weird disease that isn't even susceptible to humans. Humans aren't even susceptible to it. Yeah, here's just some of the footage. I mean, it is a full-fledged war zone taking place there outside the EU headquarters. War being waged by the farmers, as well it should. You see them throwing the manure at the police. And we can just skip through some of these videos. We can go to the next one. Because the police are obviously responding in kind. They're responding with water cannons and tear gas and anything else they can use. There's the water cannon spraying the farmers. But yeah, you picked a fight with guys who operate heavy machinery every day. Who do you think's going to win? So we obviously stand with the European farmers as they resist being systematically destroyed in their own country. Because, well, you're just not as easy to control as you know, a giant warehouse full of pigs that you can program. Yeah, there's them using the using some of the farm equipment to spray manure on the police. It's a good tactic if you don't have guns. So we'll keep an eye on that and let you know what the results of that are. But yeah, things are coming to a head there in the European Union. We can talk more about that as the Ukraine war continues to be a major topic of conversation. But it's just incredible the images coming out of this with tractors actually ramming police lines in Brussels in the EU. Which again, I hope that we can understand and spread the message that like all these various separate policies all align. It's all a part of the same trend, the same program, the same policy set that is designed from on high on purpose to disenfranchise and destroy the well-being of the European people. It's not an accident that all of this is happening. It's like all the footage we see out of Europe now. It's either giant protests against the government or just, you know, insane images of a square in Vienna where you don't see a single white person and it straight up just looks like a city center of some province of Bangladesh. So it's not going well for Europe. In a word, they're screwed and it's unfortunate. But they're not the only ones, obviously. Australia chasing them as fast as they can into the abyss, down to hell. But I want to actually talk first, or next. Well, I mean, look at that. Look at the number of tractors making their way towards the EU capital. I think we should keep an eye on this. I think the farmers should go there and not leave until everyone in the EU is no longer in power. I'll put it that way. But it's time. But it's time. It's time for a revolution. It's time for a revolution in Europe. It's actually way past time. It's actually shocking that it hasn't happened earlier. Yeah, it's time for a revolution. I mean, whether it's because the authorities are just systematically destroying your entire country, allowing your daughters to be raped by the millions and protecting the rapist, bringing them in the first place, or the fact that at this point, places like UK, they are actually providing special gold star coverage for illegal aliens, healthcare that the natives don't even receive, or the fact that the younger cohort, the younger generation in Europe is already outnumbered in their own homelands. It's time for a revolution, Europe. It's time you rise up and destroy your leadership. It's way past time. I know America, we have our own troubles. We're trying. We're doing what we can. Obviously, Europe is too, but like, it's time. It's time for a revolution. It's time that you reclaim your countries for the love of God. And some are. Let's go to clip number 17 here. This is in Ireland. The Irish rallied together and confronted the state on the ground and in the courts and actually prevented the establishment of yet another gigantic migrant camp, a gigantic colony inside Ireland. Here's the Irish people standing up against the globalist police force trying to plant a enemy headquarters in their neighborhood. Let's watch. Police, of course, happy to shove the unarmed people standing with their hands behind their backs. And, you know, I don't really know if this will work anymore. You know, we're so used to this idea that, like, the civil rights movement still exists and then this attitude is still prevalent where, like, you can go and protest abuse by the government and as long as you're innocent and you're not actually fighting them, right? You go up, you have your hands behind your back or you're just sitting in front, and then if the police abuse you, like, we're used to the response being this, like, outrage and horror as people, you know, align with the people being abused, not the abusers. That's not really how it works anymore, though. Here you've got, you know, the Irish people who have never benefited from colonialism. They've been the subject of colonialism. They've never been an imperial power. They've been the subject of abuse of imperial powers. They've never bothered anybody and are just trying to, you know, live their lives and have their country when all of a sudden they get invaded by tens of millions of foreign agitators who are committing crimes and violence. They attempt to simply protest and say, we don't want this here. And they get abused by the police. And unfortunately, the mindset of the mainstream media worldwide, the mindset of the governments worldwide is, well, you're white, so you deserve it. And the idea that you would want control over your own landmass is a form of supremacy and has to be beaten out of you. So, I don't know, we might have to change tactics a little bit. I mean, you would think typically that, yeah, a crowd of a million people showing up to peacefully oppose something and then being abused by police in response, like, this would be a catalyst for major change and it would benefit the peaceful protesters. But that's not really the world that we live in anymore. No, the powers that be, who are ubiquitous and control the media and the police and the government, if they want something done, then they'll stage a fake protest to make it look like it's the will of the people, and then they'll do what they were going to do anyway and predicate it on the fabricated show of support. Whereas if you actually have a million regular people actually protesting in favor of something, it will not get done because they don't want to do it, and they'll send the police to violently shut it down, and they'll silence any outrage that comes about because of that. So the point is, it's entirely up to us now. It's entirely up to the people on the ground. It's entirely up to the people of these countries and in these neighborhoods to resist this in a way that's effective. And it turns out that just protesting and asking your governments not to do something, it's not so effective anymore. Turns out you have to get in your tractors and go attack them. So that's what it's time to do. So you have to do that now. So now it's time to go do that, because you can protest all you want. It doesn't matter. You can vote all you want. It doesn't matter. So what else is there left to do? Die or resist. Those are your options. That's it. Every single country in Europe has shown that they have mechanisms to crush any peaceful attempt to reform. Every single time. Just this year. Whether it's AFD in Germany or the right-wing party in Le Pen in France. It's happened in Spain. It's happened in Portugal. It's happened in the UK with Brexit, where the right wing will win against all odds. With every headwind going against them, from the media to the establishment to the education, they will still win an election and nothing will change. They'll vote for the far right person, and the center right and the left wing will combine to block them out of power. You create a party in Germany to agitate for the will of the German people, they'll simply declare you terrorists and arrest you, or Antifa will kill you and they won't investigate it. So, like, that's just the world that exists now. Sucks. But it's gotten this way because we were too nice. Like, Europeans have been way too nice for way too long. And now we're dying because of it. So it's time to stop being nice. Like, it's funny. You've got this massive concerted effort worldwide, but especially here in America, try to get you to hate your ancestors. Try to get everybody to hate our ancestors because of how abusive they are. I look back and I don't hate my ancestors, but I am mad at them for being so nice. I'm mad at my ancestors for being so lenient. I'm very mad at my ancestors for not just, like, imposing themselves on everybody. Like, this whole, like, we're going to have an open society thing. Like, it's a great idea, but it sort of screwed us over. I really wish my ancestors, even my recent ancestors, had been a lot more brutal and hardcore and selfish, honestly. Because now we're going to have to be, and it's going to be way, way more difficult. Could have actually, you know, built a civilization that could resist this disease, this cancer that we've been riddled with now. I just really wish my ancestors hadn't been so damn merciful. They hadn't been so damn merciful and helpful and generous to everybody they met. They didn't have to be. They thought it would have been, like, returned. They thought, like, here, we figured out this amazing way to live and we can go and help uplift everybody else. No, it turns out it doesn't work that way. So I really wish you just killed them. I mean, at this point, What has been the benefit of how unbelievably nice and merciful and generous our ancestors were? Feels like they just sold us out. So you could be mad at them for being white supremacists. I'm mad at them for not being white supremacist enough. Should have made it more explicit, I think. Because I don't like my entire civilization going away because a bunch of scumbag scam artist liars pretend to cry and white people just give in to them. We need to stop being pussies, please. In Europe especially. Should we stick? I guess we should just stick with this. I guess let's just stick with the EU for the time being. Because I got a lot of questions about the Brown shooter, and I want to get into that. But let's go to clip number 24 here. This is about censorship in the EU. The EU is having a big meeting right now, which is why the farmers are protesting. But there's also people inside the EU trying to stop the tyranny from coming down. Let's go to clip number 24 now.
The EU wants to use censorship to protect our democracy. This is the essence behind the last proposal of our president, Ursula von der Leyen, to build a democracy shield with tools that go directly against freedom of speech. Von der Leyen was to reinforce sanctions against individuals based on their opinions if she considers they are misinforming. On top of this, our president wants to give more power to fact-checkers to moderate social media who are nothing else that people with their own biases. I believe we should follow what people like Pavel Durov and Elon Musk have done to allow more freedom of speech online. Things like community notes have helped to empower the citizens themselves to decide what's right and what's wrong instead of biased fact checkers. So please, von der Leyen, let Europeans express themselves freely even if you don't like their opinion. Thank you so much. I love you all.
I think probably one of the most iconic images out of 2025. Several of them have come from von der Leyen because she's always saying the most insane crap. But there's one from about a week ago. I'm not even sure if we played it on the show. Well, we may have to pull it in. I know I downloaded it, so I'm sure it's in the show folders for this week or last week. And it's Ursula von der Leyen giving a speech and somebody starts protesting her. And she starts going, this is the beauty of Europe, is we are allowed to express yourself. You're allowed to protest. We love it. Meanwhile, the guy shouting at her is being arrested and dragged away by the police as he's screaming. So, I mean, it's just that's the image of the EU, is Ursula von der Leyen celebrating their freedom of speech, celebrating that we don't arrest protesters in the EU as a protester is being arrested directly in front of her in real time. It's amazing, the hypocrisy, the just sheer dishonesty as they pat themselves on the back celebrating values that they are systematically eliminating. It's something to behold. Let's go to clip number four here. This is another EU member, his reckoning with von der Leyen, clip number four.
Frau von der Leyen, Sie machen Europa zur Lachnummer.
You said you've made Europe a laughingstock. You stand for corruption, censorship, green deindustrialization, and geopolitical insignificance. You complained about Trump's peace plan. Where was your peace plan all these years? You torpedoed Orban's peace efforts. Now you're negotiating a little. Why not earlier? Ukraine would have been spared a lot, and so would we. About 3 years of recession. For what? For golden oligarch toilets, for billions to a corrupt leadership in Kiev that flees from its own people, for 19 sanctions packages that do more harm to us than to Russia? That's not a peace plan. That's stupidity. Your whole approach is geopolitical kindergarten. Bad relations to the U.S., bad relations with China, bad relations with Russia, dwindling worldwide influence. That's no way to conduct foreign policy. Yes, we need strategic autonomy, our own strength, our own sovereignty, realism instead of moralism, smart diplomacy and real politicians, instead of infantile feminist in pantsuits. You, Ms. von der Leyen, are making Europe weak. You make Europe a geopolitical wrong-way driver. Make Europe great again with pleasure, but only without you. Please step down. Brutal. Brutal and incredibly accurate. It's really unimaginable how, yeah, we're applauding that man. I wish I knew who he was, honestly. I mean, it's just the evil these people have perpetuated. I've said this before, but like, you know, sometimes you get into conspiracies and it's like, would somebody really do that? You don't have to speculate. They have and are at this moment killing a million Ukrainians to achieve their ends, killing them dead. Like they're willing to murder millions of people. That's what you have to realize. What they're doing, their plans, their love of power is such that there's no limit to their monstrosity. They're willing to do anything. They believe that what they're doing is worth everything. So just recognize who it is we're dealing with here. Go to clip 30 here. This is a skit, although it's so subtle I can't even. Okay, Tomasz Frolik. You must be from Hungary or Poland, something like that. But let's go to clip 30 here because this is a skit from a very subtle comedian. I actually wasn't even sure if it was a joke at first till the very end, but I don't even know how to intro this. This is just does a great job of representing the absurdity of the pitch that the European leaders are making to their people. Let's watch.
Today, I signed up to the British Army to help defend the UK from Russia. And this is why you should too.
A major conflict is actually highly likely. So if you want to defend values that you believe in, like equality, diversity, and inclusion, now is the time to sign up for the Army and defend them throughout the world. The website was actually super inclusive and ultra accessible. And I felt totally safe throughout the application process. It even allowed me to upload my PhD essay on critical race theory and decolonization. Being in the Army is actually perfectly suited to left-leaning people who value positive change. And if more progressive-leaning folks from all genders and backgrounds fill the ranks, we can permanently change the stagnant demographic of the British Army. It's time to reclaim the armed forces as a progressive force for positive change throughout the world, to stand up to patriarchal dictators like Vladimir Putin, and create the kind of future we want for our children. I've already got my girlfriend and her boyfriend to sign up, and he's only been a British citizen for 2 weeks. It just goes to show that once you engage and inspire people to see a different kind of army that can fight war in a different kind of way, a lot of people will want to sign up. If you're ready to make the ultimate sacrifice for what you believe in, join the Army today at jobs.army.mod.uk, and I'll see you on the front line.
That's right, folks. Be a good progressive. Give the ultimate cost for your beliefs. Join the Army today. Join up. You want to go spread those wonderful democratic values? Go show Vladimir Putin, you know, who he's dealing with. Go sign up for the Army, won't you? Don't worry, we'll waive the disability thing. Yeah, it's fine. That's fine. You're a neurodivergent two-spirit. We can handle that. You can die just as well as anybody else. You can serve as cannon fodder drone targets just like everybody else can. So get in the tank. Get in the van. We're going. We're going to be back on the other side to talk a little bit more about, I'm going to talk about Brown University and just the, we're going to try to figure out what the hell's going on there. Either it's incompetence or a cover-up or both, and it ain't looking good. We'll get into that. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com. It's the final days of the Christmas 60% off mega sale. Methylene blue tincture, CMOS gummies, Shilajit gummies, they're all now 60% off. Plus all other supplements are up to 40% off when you try them once, 50% off when you order them monthly.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot do this without you. You're the reason we're here. You're our sponsor. You are what keeps us on air. And we are launching today through the 23rd of December, the final days of Christmas sale at thealexjonesstore.com. 60% off on our best-selling Ultra Methylene Blue, Iris CMOS gummies, and Shilajit gummies, and more. If you haven't tried our Ultra Methylene Blue, that is the strongest, best out there that we found, bar none, you're crazy. What it does for your mitochondria, your energy, your stamina, with no letdown, is insane. It's so good for you. Just research the studies. We have medical grade. We have the best. And you've seen all our guests and others that come in here, and they're just blown away by it, including those who are already taking Methylene Blue. They're like, wow, this is way stronger, way better. It's amazing. I'm challenging all of you. I'm challenging everybody to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds. We are in the red. I met with accountants this morning. Not too bad, but we're there. And we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and get 50% off on all future orders in perpetuity until you decide to cancel. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition, over 700 designs at thealexjonesstore.com. So my challenge to all of you is this. Get a bottle of Ultramethylene Blue for 60% off right now, and then you're going to be blown away and reorder it. You've heard all the people call in with their testimonials. This is the real deal. The best salesmen sell the best products. I promote and sell freedom. I promote and sell stopping the globalists. You know my information is the most accurate out there. Why on earth would you think that I would tell you this will change your life? The Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, the bovine colostrum, ultimate life force, spike protein, cardiovascular detox. All these are kick-butt products. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Please do your Christmas shopping there. We need your support. It's a win-win for everybody. You keep this operation. It's a true thorn on the side of the globalists on the air. And separately, the classic nitric boost. Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, I didn't know she knew about it. She bought it. So this is the best formula for your heart and for spike protein and for everything else. And men notice it in the morning when they wake up. It is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com exclusively. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost. All of you need these products. Take action now.
Whoa, dude, is that Methylene Blue? This house really knows me.
Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas! If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
We can finish up here with the coverage of what the hell's happening to Europe. Here's another speech that was made in the European Union. It's clip number three here. Marieke Erlers for Patriots for Europe, talking about what they're losing in Europe. Let's watch.
Colleagues, we live in some of the most tolerant, open, and free societies the world has ever known. Societies built on equality between men and women, on the freedom to love whom we choose, on the freedom to speak freely, and on the absolute rejection of anti-Semitism. And yet in the name of this tolerance, we have invited intolerance. This is the real discrimination we should be addressing. Not some vague, outdated, resuscitated directive that undermines our sovereignty and only paves the way for even more judicial activism. Because the truth is simple. We welcomed people into our countries without demanding that they respect the values that we hold dear. The result is that the very discrimination we fought once so hard to eliminate has returned to our streets, openly and violently. This is not diversity. This is failure. Failure to protect our citizens and failure to defend our democracies. When Christmas markets in Germany must be guarded by concrete barriers, when New Year's Eve celebrations in Paris are cancelled, when Jewish people are once again threatened on the streets of Europe, something has gone profoundly wrong. When people are afraid to celebrate their traditions, speak freely or live openly, our tolerance has been exploited. Our compassion must never come at the expense of our civilization. If we refuse to defend our values, we will lose them. Yeah. Thank you.
So there, you know, if we don't defend our values, we'll lose them. Should be obvious, but of course they are not just losing them. They're willingly surrendering them. They don't need to. I mean, it's not like it's one thing to say, you know, okay, you know, you can give up certain things that might be a barrier to diversity if that's what you value more. But like Christmas markets, you have to give up Christmas markets. You have to give up your holidays. You have to give up gathering in any large number because it's an almost certainty that it will become the target of terror attacks. I mean, it's beyond just like losing your traditions. You are literally surrendering everything to them. And they aren't even having to fight you because you're not fighting. They just drive a truck through a Christmas market and then every other Christmas market decides we'll just shut down. I mean, it's pathetic. And the actual responsible thing to do would be to go to any lengths necessary to guarantee that you don't have to have bollards around your Christmas market. It would be to like maybe even go overboard and go, yeah, just to be safe, we're getting everybody out. We're deporting all these people because it's just not worth the risk because we want to be like Poland and be able to celebrate our heritage and traditions without being blown up or run over or murdered in some horrific way. But around the world, white Christian countries are voluntarily surrendering their ability to even celebrate New Year's Eve. Go to clip number two here, where they're talking about not just Europe, but in Australia as well. They're just canceling New Year's Eve celebrations because gathering in a large group is too dangerous in Europe now when you have imported tens of millions of hostile combatants. Let's watch.
A beautiful and spectacular event, and it has all been canceled because the French government can no longer keep its own people safe from potential radical Islamic terrorists that they have welcomed into their country. Think about that. France has let in so many Middle East and North African migrants that they can no longer assemble in crowds. We're watching one of the most beautiful countries and cultures in the world commit suicide, and this threat has now spread all over the West. This is not singular to Australia or France. It is everywhere now, including in Germany, where many are too scared to go to the country's many famous Christmas markets because they are now so dangerous. They're such a target for radical Islamists. Take a listen to the details from this report.
Terrorists have struck seven European Christmas markets since 2014, three in France and four in Germany, all carried out by men of Muslim or Middle Eastern backgrounds. Authorities arrested five men suspected of planning attack number eight in Germany last week. One of them, a Muslim cleric from a German mosque who urged his followers to kill as many people as possible.
Yeah. Attack number eight foiled. There was another attack in Poland on a Christmas market foiled as well. The one in Germany, a Muslim cleric that left Egypt to move to Germany, moving to a country which tolerantly allows him to work at a mosque, to have a mosque. And what does he do when he gets to Germany and he's saved by the West? He begins indoctrinating other Muslims to murder as many Christians as they possibly can. Going to a German Christmas market at this point is a bit like playing Russian roulette. Is today the day that one of our asylum seekers living off our tax dollars is going to plow his car through this market and kill 20 of us? We don't know. In Australia, where 16 were murdered on a beach this past Sunday, many say that they have felt the threat skyrocket as their own government imported tens of thousands of migrants from Muslim countries. The Muslim population doubling in a decade in Australia. The left-wing Prime Minister of Australia, the Labour Party, A country that has the strictest gun laws in the world already just wants to add more gun laws, light a candle, and move on.
Light a candle, put it in their front window tonight at 6:47 p.m. to show that light will indeed defeat darkness. We will task, I'll take to National Cabinet this afternoon, a proposal to empower agencies to examine what can be done in this area.
Being led by people that couldn't care less if you live or die, completely detached from reality. Politically correct nonsense. Stronger gun laws so the Islamists have a harder time murdering us is the answer, right? They don't want to actually fix the problem. They'll let thousands of us die before they'll be accused of being racially intolerant. They care far more about their political orthodoxies than your life. You should always remember that. You know, everybody's reporting the
same
story.
That's a great report from Newsmax. And sticking to Australia for a little bit, it really represents the height of absurdity. You've got this attack on Bondi Beach, 16 people killed with guns, these two radical Muslims. They're now saying they were radicalized by ISIS. A few days later, you have apparently another major attack being planned and carried out but prevented when Australian counterterrorism police rammed the car and arrested five men with guns, apparently on their way to carry out another terrorist attack. And in response to this, the Australian government's only reaction, it seems like it's the only thing they can do, right? And if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And all they can do is blame white Australians. Doesn't make any sense. It's actually the opposite of what they should be doing. Again, if you show this to an alien, to an objective observer, it wouldn't even compute. It doesn't even make sense. You've got a white country, Australia, that has imported millions of non-white people who cause problems and bring their own ideology that is not aligned with the Australian one. Then you have white Australians not happy with this, not okay with their country being sold out from under them. So they want to protest. They want to speak out about it. Those people are targeted with law after law after law, making it illegal for them to promote their own survival and existence. Then you've got a terrorist attack by the people who you brought in. And instead of doing anything to combat those people, you turn around and combat the white Australians who are trying to prevent the attack that happened. It is so inverted. It's almost like comical. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. And so let's go to some of these videos. Let's go to clip number 10 here. This is the Prime Minister of Australia talking about what's going to be done as a result of the Islamic terrorist attack against Australians. Let's watch.
It is clear we need to do more to combat this evil scourge, much more. As Special Envoy to Combat Anti-Semitism, Gillian Siegel has delivered a report that sets out further steps we can take. The Australian Government adopts and fully supports the plan to combat anti-Semitism. We'll continue to work through the implementation of the 13 recommendations in consultation with the Jewish community and the Envoy. And, of course, the first recommendation was the adoption of the IRA definition of anti-Semitism that the government adopted. Today I'm announcing a significant number of additional actions to build on the plan. Firstly, the Attorney-General and Minister for Home Affairs will develop a package of legislative reforms to crack down on those who spread hate, division and radicalisation. The National Security Committee has agreed that changes will include the following 5 points. Agreed changes will include: 1. Aggravated hate speech offence for preachers and leaders who promote violence. Secondly, increased penalties for hate speech promoting violence. Thirdly, making hate an aggravating factor in sentencing crimes for online threats and harassment. Fourthly, developing a regime for listing organisations whose leaders engage in hate speech promoting violence or racial hatred. And fifthly, developing a narrow federal offence for serious vilification based on race and or advocating racial supremacy. The Minister for Home Affairs will also have new powers to cancel or reject visas for those who spread hate and division in this country or would do so if they were allowed to come here. David Gonski has agreed to lead a 12-month task force, which will include the envoy, to ensure the Australian education system prevents, tackles and properly responds to anti-Semitism. I, of course, acknowledge that more could have been done, and I accept my responsibility for the part in that as Prime Minister of Australia. But what I also do is accept my responsibility to lead the nation and unite the nation. Because what people are looking for at this time isn't more division. They are looking to come together.
Daughter of Australian shooting victim slams politicians' media for covering up Islamic terror threat. And so, of course, you just heard a raft of, you know, hate crime laws. Hate will now be an aggravating circumstance for online crimes. And it's they're literally just installing a thought crime apparatus, as if they don't already have the strongest censorship laws anywhere in the, you know, Western world. And this is where it gets kind of frustrating, because we see time and time again, the UK is maybe the best example, because you have like very similar attacks and very different responses, but same thing in Australia. If the attacks are against Christians, if the attacks are against white people, if they're against the native population, then the response is light a candle, sing a song, stop hating, open your border more, give the people who carried out the attack more leniency, arrest anybody who protests. And actually the response is, you know, brutal crackdown of the victims rather than the perpetrators. If instead the attack is against Jews, we get anti-Semitism laws. Maybe it's because there's not a term coined for anti-whiteism. I don't know why I couldn't just say anti-whiteism, anti-Europeanism, anti-Christianism, whatever it is. But there's never been even the hint or suggestion that would be an appropriate response against an attack on Christians, which I would think it would be, right? If you've got an attack by a radical Muslim against a Christmas market, why wouldn't the response be laws preventing the criticism of Christians, laws preventing the criticism of white people? That's the response when there's an attack on Jews, right? No, instead, the response is the inversion. It's we need to stamp down on Islamophobia, because Islamophobia causes the Muslims to not feel happy, and that's why they attack. It's completely retarded. The response for anti-Semitism is actually the correct response. It's only ever done if Jews are the target. And where it gets confusing and controversial is that the Jews themselves are driving a lot of this, not just the importation of the, you know, foreigners that commit the attacks, but then the weaponization of the attacks and of the Islamophobia against white Christians, even though they're not the ones attacking, it's the radical Islamists that do. And I mean, I've got a couple ways to explain this, I guess you could say. We can go to clip number 13. This was posted. I thought the caption was pretty funny. It was like, you know, people on the left are anti-Semitic, basically out of envy. There's a lot of envy there, and there's a lot of, you know, Jews are white people bad, therefore Jews bad. On the right wing, anti-Semitism comes from the fact that a bunch of Jewish groups are the cause of a lot of our problems and are proud of that fact. Let's go to clip number 13 now.
Last week, Pius organized a letter signed by over 1,200 rabbis. Can you imagine getting 1,200 rabbis to agree on one thing?
Jewish organizations of all kinds across the spectrum are all coming together to insists that the U.S. government do nothing to limit or curtail immigration. It's like, okay, thanks then. Thanks for that. So there's, you know, Hias, the Hebrew Immigrant Society, got 1,200 rabbis all come together to demand that America not restrict who comes into our country. Okay, so who comes in? Bunch of radical Islamists. They start actively attacking and killing Jewish people. So when asked about this, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a prime mover in these circles, can't even bring herself to condemn the people doing the attacks and instead insist on using the attacks from the Islamists to attack white people. I don't know what else to tell you other than this is infuriating. Let's go to clip number 21 here. This is Debbie Wasserman Schultz being asked whether Islamophobia or jihad is a greater threat to American values. She can't help herself but just go, what are we talking about? White people are the devil. Let's destroy white people. Let's watch.
What is the bigger threat to America right now, American values, American life? Islamophobia or jihad?
I think we have to focus, quite frankly, on, if we're worried about the threat to American values, on the person who's in the White House. I mean, we have a president.
Oh, come on. Really? Oh, no, is that where we're going? Come on.
Yeah, I'm going there because we have a president who has completely undermined our democracy. I am concerned about anti-Semitism, whether it comes from Islamic extremists or white nationalists or the left or the right.
The people killing Jews right now, though, around the world.
Okay, but let's, no. The Tree of Life shooting, that was not, and that was the largest at the time killing of Jews. You know, since the Holocaust, and 11 Jews, and that was an anti-Semitic white guy.
We can all agree that the overwhelming threat to Jews right now in the world comes from Islamic terrorism.
No, what we
from October 7th.
No. What we can agree on is that there is overwhelming anti-Semitism and that young people are growing up in this country. Many, many young white men are growing up in this country
okay.
who believe that Jews
that.
Are the problem for everything. And you've got to, no. Leland, as a member of the Jewish community, I really ask you to let me finish my
sentence. One as well, but
yes,
go ahead.
I get it, but let me finish my sentence. It is absolutely unacceptable to just oversimplify the problem with anti-Semitism right now and paint it with a broad brush and say, you know what? If we just deal with radical Islam, then Jews are going to be fine. No, we have a president of the United States who supports white nationalism, who has he had dinner
it's
with
going,
Nick.
Okay, but,
come on,
but,
Leland,
but
he had
I'm thinking,
with
I'm
Nick
thinking about I'm thinking about who is marching,
Tucker Carlson's anti-Semitism.
It reminds me of Don Lemon's famous quote where he's like, we have to stop demonizing people and remember that white men are evil. It's basically what Debbie Wasserman is. We have to stop painting with this broad brush and remember that white people are the bad ones. So, okay. If we can sit here and go, Islam is destroying these countries. Islam is not compatible with the West. Islam is violent and committing violence. Can we not do the same for Judaism? I can do it for Islam, but I can't do it. So it's not about like, oh, you're insulting the people of a religion. It's just like one religion's okay, the other's not. So what I see here is like a 1-2 punch, right? Jewish organizations, Hebrew Immigrant Society, and all the rabbis all demand that we bring people in. Those people attack Jews, and then the Jews, like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, say, let's not get distracted by Islamophobia. Let's focus on destroying white people. So it's like, okay, how about they all go away? How about none of this should be in any white Christian nations ever? How about just we don't want any of it? How about we don't want any of it? Go away now. And if you think that I'm misconstruing what's going on here, like you heard the premier of Australia, the prime minister of Australia say, you know, we're going after the preachers, right? You would think that means the imams. Like, don't be fooled. Here's an interview with a member of the Australian government being asked directly if Muslims will be affected by the hate speech laws, and he basically says no. So, I mean, they're instituting hate speech laws as a result of the Muslim attack. It's not going to affect them. They're literally designing the hate speech laws only to apply to white people who want sovereignty and not to be abused by all these other groups. Let's go to clip number 31 here.
Do you feel like there needs to be and should there be a greater emphasis on hate speech from Muslim clerics in the western part of Sydney?
I think, as I said earlier, what we've done is criminalise more forms of hate speech. And, you know, we criminalise the Nazi salute. Obviously, that's in its own context. But we need to be looking at all of this. And it is really important that we have.
So should there be a greater emphasis on this hate speech from Muslim clerics then?
We will go through all of this. I emphasise that we have done more in terms of criminalising hate speech than we have seen from any other government. But we need to look at all of this, and we need to make sure that we've got the right laws in place, and that we are doing everything we can to keep safe the vibrant multicultural society that we have.
So there's the Deputy Prime Minister of Australia. So these hate speech laws that are being put into place to stop the Islamic attack we just saw, will it be applied to Muslims? We did ban the Nazi salute, but that's a whole other thing. We just need to handle all of the hate in a way that, now I'm not saying that, look, Nazis bad. Can we all agree Nazis bad? We will stop the white people from trying to agitate and to protest, okay? Is that not enough? They aren't interested in stopping the hate. They're not interested in stopping the violence. They're not interested in actually putting laws into place that would prevent the next Bondi Beach. They're used to using this to their own ends. Like, I don't know, anybody else a little bit suspicious that it's the Australian government going, we need hate speech laws, we need hate speech laws, we need hate speech laws. Then the Bondi Beach attack happens and they go, oh, because of that, we need hate speech laws. Oh, gee, you aren't just using that as an excuse to do the thing you wanted to do anyway, even though the thing that you want to do will not actually help prevent the thing that you say you're trying to prevent. Maybe it's all a lie and a giant scam. Maybe white people need to just stop paying attention to what you're saying forever. Yeah, gee, I wonder. I wonder why people are becoming so Nazi.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win, but regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
gentlemen, second hour of the War Room is on. I'm going to go to a video here. This is clip number 7. This again shows you how far the Overton window has shifted in the last few years. Clip number 7 here. This is Representative Indy Ogle talking about America scrapping the Hart-Celler Act. Wouldn't that be something? Let's go now to Representative Indy Ogle's clip number 7.
Congressman, should we get rid of Hart-Celler?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We need to go back to a quota system. We need to go back and, again, acknowledge who we want here. And, look, there's different seasons. So, like, you may have a season, and I'm talking about a literal season, but a time where you need more. And I'm just going to throw things out there, like whether it's IT, whether it's ag, whether it's construction. But that's going to be ever-changing. So if the market's flooded with folks that want to be electricians, we don't need to be importing electricians. America first means America workers first, right? And so we get to decide who comes in. And we get to decide who has to leave. And right now we have to be bold in that leadership or we are going to lose the republic the same way that Europe is falling, London is falling, Paris is falling.
So that'd be the only silver lining to what's happening in Europe and Australia is they can give us a view of the future and to see what to avoid, what to not do, how to not fall into these same traps. Let's go to clip number 14 here because, again, we talked about the Overton window shifting. This is a presentation by the Department of Health and Human Services. Here's the official, you know, government healthcare authority doing something revolutionary, saying the facts, talking about reality. This is unprecedented in modern American history. Let's watch.
Men are men. Men can never become women. Women are women. Women can never become men.
Well done.
Children are innocent and they need our protection. It takes
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, standing ovation. The sky is blue. You know, gravity pulls things towards the ground. Men are men and women are women. I'm sorry, but we have to see this as a victory. We have to see this as a real victory against the forces of insanity that have beset our holdings for so long. It's sad. It's honestly pathetic and depressing that it's gotten to this point, but I guess it's a good thing. I guess it's something to be celebrated. Literally inspiring spontaneous applause for saying men are men and women are women. Finally, we have government that sounds like Mr. Rogers. And I think we can all be happy about that. I'll show you more on the other side. We've got RFK Jr. announcing the restrictions for the transgenderism procedures. We've got all these laws coming into place to prevent Medicare or Medicaid for paying for gender mutilation surgeries for children, and not a moment too soon. And as facetious, as silly as I think this is, it is a victory, and it does represent a turning of the tide and the ability of the American people, despite being opposed by everybody in every position of authority, every expert that they'll allow on TV, every media outlet, every academic outlet, they all say the same thing, and it's a lie, and the American people can just insist on the truth, and we can win, and we have. So thank God, finally, the nightmare has been, if not completely destroyed, at least massively slowed down. And we just have to keep this up because that's the exhausting thing about the truth is you're constantly going to be beset by lies. We'll be right back with more.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me.
Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I got to hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. Sure tastes great, and they're good for me, too.
You can buy me now at the alexjonesstore.com.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the CMOS and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. Just got some breaking news that I don't even want to bring you. We'll talk about some other stuff. We got to talk about some other stuff. I just can't. I mean, we can't. I can't be bothered to be talking about reparations right now. But do you know the reparations? They're passing reparations bills all over the country. All over the country, municipalities are deciding to punish white people for their existence and to just directly take their money and give it to black people. No more of this whole, like, you know, the laundry system of welfare. It's just direct payments now. So I think it was San Diego or San Francisco just passed the latest, and it's just like, how much more? How much? You know, white people are like the giving tree. Remember that Shel Silverstein book, The Giving Tree? Only it's like, if it's the end of Giving Tree, the little kid who had taken everything from the tree, hates the tree and goes around blaming the tree for all of his problems. That's sort of what it's like. We can make a new version of the giving tree where instead of going to the giving tree and being thankful and joyful for all that the tree's sacrifices have helped him with, he'll run up to the tree and be like, "You're evil. You suck. It's your fault that I'm not succeeding," and then take the tree stuff. And then when the tree is a stump, you can turn around and go, "It was the tree's fault that all this bad stuff happened." That's it. If you want to know what it's like being white, just read The Giving Tree. It'll inform you. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. You know what? Screw it. Since I started talking about it, I guess we are getting into it. Let's go to this video I just dropped in of the California Democratic supervisors describing the fact that they're now instituting racial reparations for slavery, a thing that never existed in California. So now a state that never had slavery is going to take money from people who never had slaves and give it to people who never were slaves to fight the scourge of slavery. Amazing. Yeah, this is, and the boys say, "Screw you, tree. You're the evil one, actually." Yeah, that's how it feels. That's how it feels. Let's go to this these California jackasses weaponizing racial grievances to steal more of your money. Let's watch.
We'll move now to a story we've been following for several years. Reparations for black San Franciscans are back on the table.
And today the San Francisco Board of Supervisors passed a measure that would create a fund designed to help black people who have been harmed by past city laws, including redlining from the 1950s through the 70s.
ABC 7 News political reporter Monica Madden is digging into the story for us. Monica, how much money would be added into this fund?
Dan and Amma, that's the kicker here. As things stand right now, the city is not appropriating a cent towards this reparations fund that might have made it easier to get the board's full support when the city is in a financial deficit. But supporters say, at the least, this sets up the framework for actual funding in the future.
I think it means repair.
As a descendant of slaves, James Taylor has long advocated for reparations.
My own hands have touched my grandfather's hands, and my grandfather touched his grandfather's hands, and that was a slave. So think about how recent that is and how economically the empty hands of my grandfather left me with nothing because the empty hand of his grandfather who started in slavery left him nothing.
Taylor says he's pleased San Francisco is revisiting the issue after the city rejected a controversial proposal to pay a lump sum of $5 million to qualifying black residents in 2023.
$5 million.
This most certainly is different than asking the city to pony up dollars to support reparations recommendations.
Supervisor Shimon Walton's ordinance merely sets up the fund to receive money either appropriated by the city or privately donated.
It's going to take some time. We got to build a pot and then, of course, come up with the criteria in terms of how we're going to prioritize what recommendations we address first. But this is a major first step.
Some of the city's previous recommendations for black reparations range from assistance with down payments for buying a house, improved access to education, and cash payments.
Redlining, making us pay taxes for education where our children couldn't go to those certain schools, pushing us out, gentrification. There's so many things that have been done to us systemically, and we have seen populations, we have seen races, we have seen ethnicities receive reparations, but we have not seen that for the black population.
If funded, San Francisco would be one of the first major U.S. cities to actively offer reparations for black residents.
So who would be eligible? Black San Franciscans who can prove that they were harmed by past discriminatory city policies or prove lineage tied to slavery in the U.S. could tap into this fund once there's money. And worth noting, though, part of the pushback in the past was the cost with San Francisco's repeated budget shortfall in recent years.
What are you even supposed to say? $5 million to every black person in San Francisco? Okay. How about you've already received your reparations? How about this article? How about this was your reparations? How about a generation of white people deliberately excluded from every position available in every major industry? How about that's reparations? How about the fact that white men are the only population in America that pays more in taxes than we receive? From Derek Evans for WV. Did you know that white men are the only demographic that pays disproportionately more in taxes than their population? White men are only 30.7% of the population, but we pay 42% of the taxes. White women, 30%, only pay 28%. Black men are 6.3%. They only pay 2.5%. Black women are only 6.7%, they only pay 2.5%. Hispanic men, 10%, only pay 5%. Hispanic women, about the same. Asian men also pay, I guess, above their income. How about that over the last two centuries is reparations? How about every single welfare program that disproportionately goes to black people? That's reparations. How about all of Black Lives Matter and all of the continual reparations that we pay on a rolling basis? They don't seem to have helped, huh? It's just not enough. We need $5 million per black person. Then everything will be good, right? Then they'll stop asking. Then it's settled. And they'll succeed just as much as white people. And if they don't, I guess another round of reparations is in order. What are we talking about here? This has nothing to do with history. This has nothing to do with slavery. This is the same thing that is illustrated by this chart here. It's non-white people deciding that they can take white people's stuff. That's it. It's not complicated. It's not sophisticated. It's not righteous. It's just theft. It's very simple. I think white people deserve reparations. How about reparations for all the white guys that have been systematically discriminated against right now? I'm sorry that your great-great-grandfather was discriminated against. That's not affecting you right now. You know what's affecting us right now is the active discrimination that has been legally codified and allowed to go on for the last 20 years at least. Are we going to get reparations for that anytime soon? That's actually had a tangible negative impact. It was the government doing it by design. It was these big corporations doing it by design, on purpose, on the basis of race. Sorry you got redlined out of a neighborhood 100 years ago. Who cares? Yeah, Maryland will consider slavery reparations after Governor Wes Moore's veto is overridden. Yes, we tried to veto reparations, and the Democrat overrode the veto with a veto-proof majority. Free at last. It's like it would almost be worth it if we didn't have to listen to it anymore. It would almost be worth it. Like, can we combine reparations with a one-way ticket to Liberia? That I might be in favor of. Because you know what happens when reparations go through. You don't even have to guess. Look at what happens with the fraud in Minnesota, which at this point is exploding to a degree that it's like hard to even keep track of. I can't even keep straight the number of different scams that have been perpetrated on Minnesota, to the point that it's like, apparently it's like 90% of all federal fraud is just like in Minnesota. It's crazy. It's crazy. So we know it'll be, you know, there'll be a ton of fraud. There'll be a ton of like spending money on stuff that isn't permanent. There's not gonna be a lot of investment into businesses. I'm just saying. You can give $5 million to every black person in San Francisco, and it'll be gone in about 5 years. Because that's not the way that you actually build wealth. It's not the way you actually build value. You have to actually earn something for it to be worth something to you. If you just give money to a population and ask nothing of them, they're just going to spend the money and then ask for more, obviously. And that's the frustrating part, is knowing that even if we gave them everything they wanted, $5 million to every single person in San Francisco, do you think that all of the anti-racist discrimination would stop? Absolutely not. You think all of the agitation about defunding the police and black incarceration rates, would any of that go away? Absolutely not. The top 1% by income, the top 1% of black people commit crime at the same rate as white people with an income of $35,000. It's the official chart I saw yesterday. So what does that mean? It means that even if black people are super wealthy, they still will be incarcerated at a greater rate than white people. So you'll still have black people who want to agitate taking those that statistics and claiming that it's racism that causes it. Do you understand what I mean? If you have black people who commit crime at a higher rate and get arrested at a higher rate, and black people look at that discrepancy and say, wait a second, more black people are in prison than white people, that must be racism. The racism of the gaps. Now, some people say that discrepancy is caused by poverty, but it's not. And you can look at the crime statistics. It's just not. So even if you make them all wealthy, that's not going to change. And so you're still going to have claims of racism. You're still going to have agitating for more benefits, for more exclusive, you know, rights. So it might be, you know, it'd be one thing if reparations would be like the final thing, but it ain't. I fell for this once with Obama. I thought that would be the final thing. I thought if we just have a black president, then we can just put all this racist crap behind us and stop hearing about it constantly, stop being dragged over the coals and made to feel guilty and have our money stolen over crimes that were committed 100 years ago. Maybe that would be the end of it once and for all. What is the final thing we need to put this behind us? It'll never be behind us, is what we're learning. It doesn't matter what you capitulate to. It's never going to end. If you think reparations is the final step in racial harmony, you are an idiot. That's like saying, let's just feed the bear this one time, then he'll leave us alone, right? Hey, a bear is snooping around our camp. I know, give him a bag of marshmallows, then he'll go away. I cannot believe they're doing reparations. And like, this is the thing. all of this stuff is happening quietly behind the scenes. And like, we don't even have the bandwidth to pay attention to it. But it's like the same thing as last week. Was it Cincinnati or Chicago agreed to pay out Black Lives Matter rioters who broke the curfew law and are paying them $8 million? And it's like, I would have been against that. I would have agitated against that if I knew it was going on. But just behind the scenes, quietly, there are these lawsuits going on. There are these reparations bills getting put forward. And they're just doing it in every different city, every different state. And it's incumbent on us. We got to identify this stuff and be working against it, be agitating against it, and be protesting against it. Because they're not making a big deal out of it. They're just quietly doing it. Despite the fact that it is just on the face of it, blatantly against every law of the Constitution, every, you know, just moral compunction we have as Christians, that you're not guilty of the sins of your father, like that you're responsible for your own well-being, that even if you don't start off in the right spot, we have an open society where hard work and genius can be rewarded and you can be elevated to the highest positions on the basis of your own hard work. Like, these things are all completely and utterly betrayed when they just go, we're taking money from white people and we're giving it to black people because racism, slavery 200 years ago. If we have reparations in combination with deportations, maybe we could have a discussion. But if it's just going to be the latest in a long line of never-ending extortion of white people, we can't let that happen. So I think we can't let that happen, actually. Just insane. Yeah, you've gotten your reparations literally every year since the Civil War. And the Civil War itself was pretty big reparations. Can the white people whose families were killed during Civil War, can we get reparations for that? Obviously not. No, obviously not. All right, let's talk about Brown University, because I don't know if I've ever seen a public display of incompetence quite this galling. And I know Alex was talking about this a lot today and asking the question, is it incompetence or a cover-up? And I think he came to the same conclusion I do. It's both. It is an incompetent cover-up is what we're witnessing. And the incompetency is honestly too much to even be accidental. Clearly they're covering this up. Clearly they are deliberately not trying to find the shooter. And this should be terrifying to everybody in America. And knowing that if a certain type of person kills you, the government itself will cover it up. I would want to hear from the family of the young woman who was apparently targeted for assassination. How do they feel this investigation is going? This is the new footage of the shooter. Again, very little information. Again, from a private residence. Now, how this got to be so convoluted is actually pretty interesting. Yeah, apparently they now say there may be a connection between the Brown University attack and the MIT attack. Here's our FBI making snow angels. They're having a wonderful time. Is this AI? That's really good AI. They might as well. I mean, the kicking the snow wasn't AI. Let's go to a few of these videos. Let's go to clip number 6 here. Well, we'll start off with clip number 6, and I'll pull this out, and then we'll continue this on the other side. But this is just a beginning, just laying out some of the absurdity behind this investigation. Let's watch.
Fox News alert. It's been almost 5 days since a gunman shot up one of the most prestigious universities in the world and got away with it. No one knows where the shooter is, who he is, or what he looks like. After days of no answers and no leads, Brown students are angry.
The general mood I've been feeling is like getting the air knocked out of you. Pretty sad on campus. We have been concerned and confused and hoping that there's more progress in the case. There's definitely uneasiness with the gunman not being in custody.
There's uneasiness because we're not getting any answers from the people in charge. Their press conferences are an embarrassment. The police chief doesn't even know who was in the room during the shooting.
Can you now say how many kids were in that classroom, and did the gunman come in from the back so these people never knew it was coming, or did he come in front with full view of everybody?
And that's all part of the interviews, and actually we're cooperating with Brown to get the roster. That was a study hall, so we don't have the number. We're still getting information as far as who was there.
It's been 5 days, and you don't have a list of witnesses? You don't even know how many witnesses there are? And the witnesses that you have talked to, they told you the gunman shouted something, but you don't know what that is. One eyewitness said there was around 20 ducking behind the table. You can't track down 20 of your own students? Well, the New York Times says there's 60 eyewitnesses. How do they know that? And the chief doesn't. The local media has had it.
Had it been a final exam, we'd have a roster. We handed it over. We know exactly who was in the room because everybody shows up for a final. But for a study session, it's elective.
We're finishing the answer. Ronaldo.
It's elective.
I have a question for you.
It's elective to turn out for a study session. So we don't know exactly what fraction of the overall roster turned out for a voluntary review session.
Okay. Remember the black student witness who told ABC that the shooter had a long gun that was really big? Now they're saying the gun might have been small.
You don't think there's multiple weapons?
No, just that individual.
I just want to jump in here, too, because, you mentioned a long gun. We are not in a position to say, unless the chief, you want to square it, whether this was a long gun or not.
And get this. Now we're learning Brown University had more than 800 surveillance cameras. They had 1,200. And not a single camera got a shot of the shooter entering or exiting the building. Is it dumb luck that he found the one blind spot on campus? Or is he a student who knows the lay of the land? Or did he just case the place for hours and no one noticed?
It's believed, based on what we know, that the gunman, primary person of interest, the suspect, came out of that build, out of that entrance or exit, and started walking this way and passing this dumpster. You just look around this parking lot.
So, long story short, they just have nothing. They didn't even interview the eyewitnesses. They have no head count of how many people were even there. Now, the latest, and this just broke literally minutes ago, police have identified a Brown University suspect. They say there's a warrant out for their arrest, but they have not released any information. They just say they've not released the name. He's still at large. He's a suspect in his 40s. So we know it's a male in his 40s, and that's all we know. But this apparently has something to do with the connection to the shooting at MIT of the nuclear scientist. We'll try to find out what exactly that connection is. And whether the people who found the name of the guy, apparently it wasn't that guy, because that guy was a freshman at Brown, the name that they identified as being removed from Brown's University's website very suspiciously. So we'll follow up on this more. Again, just minutes ago, they have released the fact that they have a suspect. He's not in custody, still at large. He's in his 40s. They're connecting the link to the nuclear scientist. Zero Hedge asks questions. What the heck is happening in America's Ivy League colleges? Well, they're full of idiots now, so anything, I guess.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot do this without you. You're the reason we're here. You're our sponsor. You are what keeps us on air. And we are launching today through the 23rd of December, the final days of Christmas sale at thealexjonesstore.com. 60% off on our best-selling Ultra Methylene Blue, Iris Sea Moss Gummies, and Shilajit Gummies, and more. If you haven't tried our Ultra Methylene Blue that is the strongest, best out there that we found, bar none, you're crazy. What it does for your mitochondria, your energy, your stamina, with no letdown, is insane. It's so good for you. Just research the studies. We have medical grade. We have the best. And you've seen all our guests and others come in here, and they're just blown away by it, including those who are already taking Methylene Blue. They're like, wow, this is way stronger, way better. It's amazing. I'm challenging all of you. I'm challenging everybody to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds. We are in the red. I met with accountants this morning. Not too bad, but we're there. And we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and get 50% off on all future orders in perpetuity until you decide to cancel. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition, over 700 designs at thealexjonesstore.com. So my challenge to all of you is this. Get a bottle of ultramethylene blue for 60% off right now, and then you're going to be blown away and reorder it. You've heard all the people call in with their testimonials. This is the real deal. The best salesmen sell the best products. I promote and sell freedom. I promote and sell stopping the globalists. You know my information is the most accurate out there. Why on earth would you think that I would tell you this will change your life? The Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, the bovine colostrum, ultimate life force, spike protein, cardiovascular detox. All these are kick-butt products. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Please do your Christmas shopping there. We need your support. It's a win-win for everybody. You keep this operation. It's a true thorn on the side of the globalists on the air. And separately, the classic nitric boost. Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, I didn't know she knew about it. She bought it. So this is the best formula for your heart and for spike protein and for everything else. And men notice it in the morning when they wake up. It is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com exclusively. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost. All of you need these products. Take action now.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me.
Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas!
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad.
All right, welcome back, folks. Feliz Navidad. I'm trying to figure out what the logic is in announcing that you have a suspect, but then not saying his name, not saying who he is. I mean, he's not under arrest. So you're trying to find him. Maybe somebody knows who he is. Maybe somebody knows where he is. Maybe if you say, hey, we're looking for whatever, you know, this guy, somebody will go, oh, that guy, he's in my shop right now. So how do you release a suspect? You say, we have a suspect. He's in his 40s. He's a male. He's not in custody. And that's all we're telling you. Okay. Care to give a name? And again, I have to wonder if they're not withholding the name so they can, like, scrub social media. That's always a big, you know, controversy when these mass shootings happen, especially when it's a leftist that does it. They want to make sure that you're not able to read their manifesto or go through their social media and see what they were promoting. So, and I haven't heard any elaboration on how these two attacks could be linked. People just keep saying they're linked somehow. From Zero Hedge, first Brown University shooting, then MIT professor murder. Police investigate possible link. Authorities on Thursday continued to search for the killer of world-renowned Massachusetts Institute of Technology professor and fusion energy physicist who was shot near his shot and killed inside his home near Boston earlier this week, a suspicious attack that occurred just days after the deadly shooting at Brown University. It was only 50 miles away, the distance between these two attacks. Senior law enforcement sources say federal, state, and local authorities have uncovered evidence suggesting the two incidents may be connected, marking a major shift in the investigation. This contrasts with earlier statements from the Boston from the FBI Boston field office, which said there appeared to be no connection. We haven't heard what that connection might be. I'm trying to figure it out myself. By midweek, Israeli news publication The Jerusalem Post reported that Israeli officials were examining intelligence suggesting a possible Iranian connection to Loureiro's shooting death. The outlet cautioned that the assessment had not been verified, not been supported at this stage by official findings from U.S. investigative authorities. Which I have to say, as much as there's a problem on the right wing with people blaming everything on Israel, Israel blames literally everything on Iran to the point that it's kind of ridiculous. Like out of all the conspiracy theorists who have a penchant for blaming one particular group on everything, the Israelis really are the worst. They blame everything on Iran. Who tried to shoot Trump? That was Iran. Who shot Charlie Kirk? Probably Iran. Who shot this professor? Iran. Who carried out the Bondi Beach massacre? Probably Iran. It's like, is there anything they don't do? Is there anything they're not involved in? Anything they don't have their hands in? And at this point, it's like everything Israel blames on Iran, I'm pretty sure Israel did. So it's a nice little shortcut to know what they get up to is what they try to blame on Iran without any evidence whatsoever. I mean, genuinely, the drones over New Jersey, those were Iranian, right? Is there anything they haven't blamed on Iran? Even though doesn't even make sense. ISIS is firmly against Iran because it was created by the CIA and Mossad, so serves their bidding. Anyway, we'll move on, but there's still just an absolute emptiness of just absolutely no information when it comes to the Brown shooter that we have still. They're probing a connection, but they won't say what the connection is, and I can't figure it out myself. So that's what we got. You could not find a better group of corrupt morons. Now, I won't play the audio because it's pretty long and it's not super interesting, but they've uncovered transmissions from Providence police scanners revealing officers staged outside the university and delayed entry during the critical moments of the shooting, which allowed the shooter actually to escape in the first place. So yet again, just like Uvalde, just like all these other mass shootings, the police show up and then just stand around and don't actually intervene. And in this case, don't even capture the guy, let alone stop the shooting from taking place. So we can put the onus fully on Providence, Rhode Island, and the FBI for that matter. Now, with that, I do want to remind you that we have a fundraiser going on right now. If you're listening to Alex's show, you heard him talk about it a little bit. And obviously, he knows a hell of a lot more than me, including all the background stuff. It's frankly just too much to even keep track of if you're not actually in the meetings, which I'm not. But what I do know is that we are in the red, not by very much and not by any fault of our own. And this is really the most annoying part about this. You've got all these leftist organizations going down over the last several years. Just can't pay the bills, can't pay their workers, go down completely. Totally on their own volition. They have every benefit they could possibly get. They've got corporate sponsorships, and they get cash injections from private equity on a routine basis. Places like Vice, just like, here's $400 million. Oops, it's gone in 3 years, and we shut down. It's like totally ridiculous. Meanwhile, we have every obstacle in our way. We have every single organ of authority trying to destroy us openly, and we still survive, and we still succeed. And if we go down, it will be by no fault of our own. It will not be because we didn't work hard enough or didn't try hard enough or weren't on the money or got stories wrong. We have the most scrutiny on us out of anybody, and yet we're right all the time. We take the biggest leaps in order to tell you things knowing that, you know, we're putting ourselves out there. We're putting ourselves in the crosshairs of very dangerous people. And we do it anyway, and we succeed, and we know our audience appreciates it because you go to thealexjonesstore.com and because you go to infowarsstore.com. And so I guess what happened is, because there's this bankruptcy nonsense going on, the receiver, whoever the legal authority is that's been placed in front of us, decided we can't buy any more products to sell at InfoWars Store. And so we're losing money because of these orders. And so Alex basically said, well, can we do a fundraiser? Can we sell signed posters? You know, that way we don't have to order millions of them. It's a low-cost product, but it's a fundraiser. So can we at least do that to try to keep the lights on? And they said yes. So that's what we're doing. So, you know, you can see here the video of Alex actually signing it by hand. So what you're getting is actually a hand-signed poster when you go to InfoWarsStore.com, and it's a fundraiser purchase, but something you can hang on your wall and be proud of, knowing that you know, came to give us reinforcements when we most desperately needed it. This is that point in the battle, you know, like Helm's Deep. This is where the humans have been fighting with everything they've got, even though it's a seemingly losing battle. And you can be Gandalf coming over the ridge at first light and rescuing us in our hour of need. Please do go to InfoWarsStore.com. Get one of those posters. There's three designs. There's the Alex with the gun poster and the Defend the West poster and the Make No Peace with Evil poster. Gotta say, I think I like the Make No Peace with Evil poster most, but that Alex one is absolutely iconic as well. So get your signed poster today at InfoWarsStore.com. Keep us on the air and in the fight. And we appreciate it so much when you do contribute as you do. We do not take it for granted. And, you know, I heard Alex talking about, you know, maybe we'll have to reach out to some people. Maybe we'll just have to beg for money from rich people. But I really don't think we will have to do that if our audience, like we always have, like you always have, comes through for us and helps us to get back into the red before the beginning of the next year. Now, I've got a bunch of interesting stories. You know, Zero Hedge asks, like, what the hell is going on in our higher education? Yeah, more than you might think. More than you might think. Not only people getting murdered on campus and the murderer just strolling away without anybody even trying to stop him. From today, Harvard morgue manager convicted of stealing and selling body parts gets 8 years in prison. Ah, yes, our institutions of higher learning. Harvard science professor A.V. Loeb discusses the potential origins. Oh, wait, what the hell is this? It's got things about the space object, Atlas One. A former manager of the Harvard Medical School morgue in Boston was sentenced to 8 years in prison for stealing and selling body parts, quote, as if they were baubles. Authorities said Cedric Lodge was at the center of a ghoulish scheme in which he shipped brains, skins, hands, and faces to buyers in Pennsylvania and elsewhere after cadavers donated to Harvard were no longer needed for research. His wife, Denise Lodge, was sentenced to just over a year in prison for assisting him. They appeared Tuesday in federal court in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. In one example, Cedric Lodge provided skin to a buyer so it could be tanned into leather and bound into a book. A, quote, deeply horrifying reality, Assistant U.S. Attorney Allison Martin said in a court filing. In another, Cedric and Denise Lodge sold a man's face, perhaps to be kept on a shelf, or perhaps to be for something even more disturbing. That's like not even the only example of this type of scandal in the recent past. I guess if you're going to have a society that has professions that involve dealing with dead bodies, you might want to make sure you're only putting the best people in that position, not the type of people that will then turn around and sell the human bodies for profit. But maybe that's, you know, too much to ask. Maybe that doesn't comport with our DEI hiring standards. I don't know. I'm just not sure. And another horrifying story that you'd think would be a little bit more of a story, since all of the implications implied in this. Spanish police search laboratory in Africa during its swine fever probe. Okay, that's pretty interesting. A member of a Spanish emergency military unit disinfecting vehicles in a restricted area due to African swine fever virus. Spanish police searched a state-funded laboratory near Barcelona on Thursday as part of an investigation into the origin of the African swine fever outbreak in the same area, regional police said. The court-ordered move follows concerns raised this month that the outbreak detected in wild boars could have been caused by a laboratory leak. Genome sequencing showed a strain similar to that used in research and vaccine development in different other cases in Europe. African swine fever is harmless to humans but can be fatal to pigs and wild boars and spreads rapidly. Spain is the European Union's largest pork producer, accounting for about a quarter of the bloc's output. And the outbreak has threatened exports, prompting authorities to impose movement restrictions and step up efforts to reassure trading partners. Now, again, call me a conspiracy theorist. Call me, paranoid. But it seems very convenient that you've got this accidental lab leak of a disease that seems to align with all of the designs of the authorities in Spain already. It's just kind of coincidental. Like right now, we've got the EU under attack from farmers because of the various laws, the dozens of attempts to basically make farming illegal, to basically destroy the Europeans' ability to feed themselves, particularly out of small farms. And here you have this lab-created disease being released that suddenly shuts down pork production in Spain. I mean, maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe. The police say the search at the Center for Research in Animal Health was ordered by a local investigating judge and forms a part of a preliminary proceedings that have been declared secret. The center did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Cressa, the organization, has told the news verification website Maltida.es that it found no evidence of being the source of the outbreak. The outbreak, Spain's first since 1994, has been detected only in wild animals in the Collserola Hills outside Barcelona, with no cases reported on farms. Authorities have discovered the virus in 26 wild boar carcasses in the 6-kilometer confinement area imposed by authorities after the outbreak. Cressa is located within that same area. So apparently in Spain, they're having an outbreak of African swine flu, and the Spanish authorities just raided a laboratory on the suspicion that it was a leak from that lab. You'd think it'd be a bigger story. You'd think it'd be a bigger story, not just because it appears to me perfectly in line with the other worldwide conspiracies we see to destroy the ability of Europeans and Western countries to feed themselves. Again, earlier this week, we had the story of the lumpy skin disease in cows causing the French authorities to go in and slaughter entire herds if just one cow is found to be infected. I wonder where that disease came from. So it's not just the fact that this is going on. It was USDA funded lab. Isn't that interesting? It's that. It's the fact that we are funding labs all over the world that can leak or release viruses on purpose. And every time that happens, it happens to be perfectly in line with the wider geopolitical goals of the people in charge with our health response. So I'm suspicious, personally. I'm very suspicious. Yeah, I've got more about Zelensky as well when it comes to Europe going to war with Russia. I mean, there's never been a more asinine suggestion, but they are doubling down on that. And Zelensky seems to be getting to the end of his rope. From Infowars.com, Zelensky says Trump may die even as Trump continues funding Ukraine's war. On Thursday, Ukraine's dictator, Volodymyr Zelensky, spoke about his ongoing war and his NATO aspirations during a summit with European leaders in Belgium. After making the proclamation that he will continue his war into 2026 on Wednesday, the dictator is now saying that joining NATO may be a possibility, assuming that President Trump dies. The U.S. policy is consistent regarding Ukraine's membership in NATO. They don't see us there. Maybe the position will change in the future. That's a matter of politics. The world changes. Some live, some die. That's life. So Zelensky's waiting for Trump to die, I guess. You know, it was recently revealed, actually, by a person on the Trump team that they could have prevented this whole war from happening in the first place simply by agreeing that Ukraine would never be a part of NATO. Now, we've known that the entire time. Putin said it over and over. I mean, that's always been established. But Now we have actual, I believe it was a leaked recording of a person in the Biden camp saying that, yeah, Biden knew he could prevent the war by dropping the NATO, you know, request for Ukraine, and they didn't want to do that. And so they let the war happen. And so we've got a million dead Ukrainians, hundreds of billions of dollars stolen from us, just all of the chaos and misery and death that has been brought about is all because they wanted to bully Russia and try to bring in some a country very close to Russia, very strategically important to Russia, into NATO in order to try to weaken Russia in the long, slow burn Cold War that we're waging with them for no reason other than they don't want to go along with the New World Order plan to destroy every nation and fold us into these giant conglomerates. So that's why a million Ukrainians had to die. Sorry about that, but Biden's a retard. So now you're all dead. And I guess we're not apologizing for that. We're going to go now to clip number 8 here. This is RFK Jr. announcing restrictions for transgender procedures. Again, a glorious victory for the Trump administration. I'm not even being sarcastic. This is actually a great thing. We're very happy to see this happen. This is might not shift the geopolitical world, but it certainly will prevent tens of thousands of children from being mutilated by their parents. So wonderful to see. Let's go to RFK Jr. now, clip number 8.
Doctors assume a solemn obligation to protect children. Yet doctors across the country now provide needless and irreversible sex-rejecting procedures that violate their sacred Hippocratic oaths by endangering the very lives that they are sworn to safeguard. The American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, peddled the lie that chemical and surgical sex-rejecting procedures could be good for children who suffer from gender dysphoria. They betrayed the estimated 300,000 American youth ages 13 to 17, conditioned to believe that sex can be changed. They betrayed their Hippocratic oath to do no harm. So-called gender-affirming care has inflicted lasting physical and psychological damage on vulnerable young people. This is not medicine, it is malpractice. We're done with junk science driven by ideological pursuits, not the well-being of children. A peer-reviewed report published by the HHS Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health last month confirms that sex-rejecting procedures impose medical dangers and lasting harm on children who receive these interventions. So today we are taking 6 decisive actions guided by gold standard science and the week 1 executive order from President Trump to protect children from chemical and surgical mutilation. This morning I signed a declaration. Sex rejecting procedures are neither safe nor effective treatment for children with gender dysphoria.
And so, you know, bravo. This is actually wonderful. RFK Jr. announces restrictions for transgender procedures. It's not medicine. It's malpractice. It's exactly right. And what did he put? He said he didn't say gender affirming care. It was gender rejecting care. That's obviously what it is. House passes bill banning sex change surgeries, puberty blockers, and hormone therapies for minors. Mainstream media outlets and leftist politicians are calling the bill anti-trans as it would make it a felony punishable by up to 10 years in jail for any doctor to perform gender reassignment surgery or prescribe hormone replacement therapy or puberty blockers to children. Family members or others could also be charged in assisting the minor in accessing the transgender medical, quote, care. While the measure passing is a victory, it will likely fail in the Senate because at least 7 Democrats would have to vote for the bill in order for it to pass. And God help you if you're trying to find 7 Democrats willing to acknowledge reality. That's just an impossible task, I hate to tell you. So again, it's great to see. You can find both these articles on Infowars.com. I do want to go to one more video here before we go to the break, and it's clip number 27. Because there, you know, with all the attacks recently, there is this sort of half-hearted attempt to restart gun control conversations. And I've said it a million times recently, but I guess it's worth reiterating. It ain't going to happen. You're not taking our guns. We know who you people are. We know what your intentions are now. Frankly, it's a miracle we haven't used our guns more effectively yet. But the idea that we are going to willingly give up our ability to defend ourselves is delusional. You people are delusional. You are very effectively trying to kill us while we have guns. Do you think you're ever going to take them? It's not happening ever again. Okay, so I'll just reiterate that every time they bring it up, like it's just not happening. I almost want you to try so we can finally kick this party off, but it's not going to happen, okay? You come for the guns, we use the guns. That's just the end of the discussion, so shut up. But there's a very good reason we want guns, because guns are useful in a world where bad guys have guns. And a lot of times, the good guys stop the bad guys with guns. You wouldn't know that if you pay attention to the official stats, because they hide that fact. Let's go now to clip number 27.
Huge. Armed citizens stopped 48% of all criminal shooters last year, and the FBI was just caught massively lying about those numbers in their public reports. They recorded, get this, none of them. 0%. Now, you and I and everyone else have seen those local heroes on social media, but rarely do we ever see these stories in mainstream media. Well, the script is about to flip, because a new study by the Crime Prevention Research Center reveals that armed civilians stopped over one-third of active criminal shooters between 2014 and 2024, nearly 10 times higher than FBI's reported 3.7% average. And again, with even more Americans getting armed post-2020, just last year alone in 2024, civilians stopped half of all criminal shooters. Yet, as I just stated, the FBI recorded zero of them. You might be asking, how is this possible? Well, while digging for the study, researchers found that police were often falsely credited instead of the armed civilian, which is a recording pattern that clearly increased over the last 10 years. Now, this begs the question, why would they work so hard to hide the significant benefits of an armed public?
I guess this is Ariana Masters. She's funny. What could it possibly be? Why would they want to hide this? That's excellent. Yeah, folks, they're not going to tell you. They're not going to tell you that armed civilians stopped gun violence. They want you disarmed so they can abuse you. The only reason you'd ever want somebody disarmed, unless they're a criminal, but you're not a criminal. So why would they want you disarmed? Because they're the criminals, people. Stay tuned. We have a fantastic interview with Kevin Deanna coming up in the final hour. You're not going to want to miss this. It's absolutely huge. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do, yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win, but regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Christmas.
sharing our existing expertise in decarbonization and infrastructure. It's a perfect partnership.
I completely agree with Larry. This is going to be the golden age of infrastructure investing, both in terms of the need for capital as well as investors who want that capital, okay?
In a move that's raising alarms across the nation, BlackRock, through its 2024 acquisition of Global Infrastructure Partners, or GIP, has surged into direct ownership of U.S. energy infrastructure.
BlackRock, one of the largest asset managers on earth, which owns just about everything, appears to be quietly buying up huge pieces of the U.S. energy grid. But don't worry, they say it's all about building infrastructure for artificial intelligence, so don't worry about it. Nothing to see here.
Shifting from passive investor to hands-on controller of critical utilities and grids.
The company BlackRock that's f***ing everybody in America, they're going to be buying utility companies now. That's right, utility companies. They've already purchased an electric company up in Minnesota. You. They have plans to invest hundreds of billions of dollars into the utility market here in the United States so you can watch your electricity and gas bills go up to nosebleed levels.
The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission approved a $6.2 billion takeover of Elite, parent of Minnesota Power, by a BlackRock-led consortium with Canada Pension Plan in October of 2025, granting private equity majority control over power serving 150,000 customers.
This $6.2 billion deal follows months of debate and pushback from groups across Minnesota.
It is not always going to be in the financial best interest of BlackRock to keep our rates as low as possible. That's not the business that they're in. They're in the business of making profit from as many things as possible.
I'm a Minnesota Power customer. So if you have read stories over the years about beloved brands like Joann's or Red Lobster being driven into the ground by private equity, now imagine if that was your utility, because that's where private equity sector is going, as they have extracted all of the value out of the retail and service sector that they can. They are increasingly turning their attention to infrastructure and the things that make up the material basis of our lives.
Meanwhile, GIP is in advanced talks for a potential $38 billion acquisition of AES Corporation, which is a major player with renewable assets nationwide.
Ares' team drafts the game plan for restructuring portfolios, valuing toxic assets, and bailing out collapsing banks. Larry Fink had turned the greatest financial disaster of a generation into his greatest triumph. While American finance takes years to rebound, he emerges with friends in high places, more money than ever, and what he's always wanted, the influence of a president, a company like a world power, without a single campaign nor a single vote, true power. And while no one was taking notice, he has created a playing field where, no matter what, BlackRock always wins.
Thousands of miles of overhead pylons will be erected to connect offshore wind farms, solar farms, data sheds, and millions of cars and other renewable sources to that national grid.
In Texas, BlackRock's footprint grows via GIP-owned firms like Eolian, developing massive battery storage projects such as the Padua complex near San Antonio to stabilize ERCOT amid retiring fossil plants and exploding AI-driven demand.
Blackstone is currently in the process of purchasing the Texas-New Mexico grid. BlackRock actually started under Blackstone, and while they still claim that they're separate now, if you look at their yearly reports and their quarterly reports, they still push the ESG narrative. The Texas Attorney General here has a lawsuit against BlackRock for that very reason, where they were manipulating the grids and pushing solar and wind technology and offsetting coal and oil and gas because of them pushing this ESG narrative.
Consumer advocates and experts warn of profit-driven models loading debt onto the utilities, slashing accountability, and hiking residential bills to subsidize big tech clients, eroding public oversight of essential infrastructure serving millions, and private equity prioritizes returns over resilience. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams, that's a daily serving per gummy, huge container of them, such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined today by Kevin DeAnna. He is a prominent writer and commentator on immigration, identity politics, and American nationalism. He hosts the Identity Politics podcast from American Renaissance, where he provides sharp analysis on cultural and political issues facing the historic American nation. Find Identity Politics on Rumble and Odyssey. Follow him on X at VDareJamesK for daily insights. Kevin, welcome to the show, sir.
Harrison, real pleasure to be here, man.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. You run probably my favorite Twitter account of all time. You're definitely in the top five. And so I've been following you for a while. We finally met at a VDare event, and then I got to see you speak, and it was mind-blowing. It was really something else. So I'm glad that you're putting your face and your voice out there now. Tell us about Identity Politics. What made you want to start this podcast?
Well, for a very long time, I was obviously working under different pen names over the years because I've been doing this for about 20 years now. And there were things that were possible 20 years ago, working in the conservative movement, trying to infiltrate it and turn it in the right direction, where it made sense, where you were basically leading sort of a dual life. Mm-hmm. You're working at like the Leadership Institute or whatever Conservatism Inc. thing during the day under your real name, and then you're writing for all these websites under a different name. There's no point in doing any of that anymore. I think that one thing people need to understand, especially young people who are coming into this movement at the first time, is you are going to get doxxed. There is a 100% chance that it's going to happen. There's no point in sneaking around. Just own it. Real face, real name. The stakes are high. We now have a mass constituency. There's no point in sneaking around anymore. And one of the things that made me want to start Identity Politics is writing is just not the way to reach a younger audience now. People don't read these kinds of long-form essays. People want to do streaming, they want to do debates, they want to see videos, they want people to be speaking on the issues that are happening right now. And I think you would agree that there's a real difference between Gen Z and the younger millennials and the people who really built the conservative movement that we're sort of dealing with right now. Young people understand that their country is being taken away from them. In many ways, they don't even know what it's like to have a country. Right. If you're below 30, you just have no idea what that's like. But the older conservatives, they're completely unaware that this transformation is taking place. And so I really wanted to say something to the generation that's going to have to fight to reclaim a country that was taken from them before they were even born.
Yeah, and all of this they're just fascinating aspects to the sort of political transition that we're going through right now, where people are less afraid of just coming out and saying what we all know to be true. White people are being destroyed and that's evil. Why has it taken so long for this truth to come about? Like, it seems so obvious to people like you and I, and you've been in this longer than I have. Why was it so long? Why was it so forbidden to talk about this stuff? And what do you think has caused the Overton window shift to such a degree? Is it all Trump? I mean, it can't be all him, right?
Big part of it. It's a big part of it in the sense that if you are below a certain age, the only political era you know is the era of Trump, which is crazy when you think about it. Because if you're like a millennial, you remember like George W. Bush.
Right.
You remember Mitt Romney. You remember John McCain. I mean, in many ways, I think a valid criticism of older people, including me, is that we're too easy on Trump because we remember how bad things were before.
Right.
And so when you have Trump, you're like, oh, this is so much better than what existed before. And so you're not hard enough on him. But the big thing that's really happening, and this is something that I think people only under 30 or under 35 really understand, is there's nothing to lose anymore. There was always, you had some skin in the game if you were older American. You had some sense of wealth. You had some sense of property. You had some sense of investment in the country. If you are young and white, you have no stake in the country. None whatsoever. If America wins a war, if the GDP goes up, what difference does that make to you? And increasingly, your leaders are very comfortable in telling you, you're going to be replaced. We don't care about you. You have no skills. We're going to bring in workers from the rest of the world. You're not suitable to our needs. There's any retreat or any place of safety has been totally cut off, which is the one thing Sun Tzu says not to do in The Art of War, right? You got to give your enemy a place to run to. And young Americans are being left with no place to run to. So they have no choice but to turn around and fight. And the demographic transformation, even in just the last 10 years, has been so remarkable and so drastic that one can't help but notice it. We're in a totally different country than the one that existed even in 2015 when Trump came down that escalator. And while Trump has done a lot of good things, not least stopping, for all intents and purposes, illegal immigration without passing amnesty, which, of course, all the conservatives said was impossible for years, he has failed to stop or let alone reverse that demographic transformation. And now we're looking around and we feel like foreigners in our own land. And unlike these other people, this is the only country we have.
Right. And even if we wanted to go back, you know, I'd have to go back 400 or 500 years before I found my family in Europe. But it's not like Europe exists in any real way either.
No, I mean, you hear this if from the old days, you remember going to like immigration demonstrations and stuff, and you would see these people waving foreign flags, screaming at you things like, go back to Europe, go back to Europe. Well, we can't go back to Europe. One, because as you say, it's already happening in Europe. And two, if we did go back to Europe, they would just follow us. That's the problem. We're not allowed to have any place that's really our own. And I think that's the biggest thing that a lot of young white Americans are looking for, this idea of ownership, the idea of a country that belongs to you and only to you. I mean, Vivek Ramaswamy just published an article in the New York Times criticizing Nick Fuentes and really a kind of strawman version of the Groypers, where he was saying, oh, well, what is an American? An American means believing in certain eternal principles of free speech or limited government or these types of things. Well, there are a lot of Americans today who don't believe in those things. And more importantly, this idea that American identity is universal and that everybody on earth is a potential American, the founding fathers didn't believe that. So is George Washington not an American, but somehow Vivek Ramaswamy is? This is what is being sold to young Americans, and increasingly they're looking around and saying, we don't buy any of this. And they have nothing to lose, and they have no authorities that they're bound to respect, and certainly no people that they're expected to owe loyalty to that shows loyalty to them. So why don't they want to burn it all down? That seems like a very reasonable thing to do. The danger for the right, of course, is that so many of these people, if they're not given a real alternative, they are going to go in for the sort of socialism that is being provided by the left, because they figure at least we're being offered something.
Yep. And that is, I mean, all these things are the arguments that I've been making for years at this point, it seems, where the older generation, I don't get what their problem is in understanding this. That, like, if you are listening to young people who are, in some cases, you know, TikTok videos, it's a trend now, especially young women crying in their cars going, I cannot afford to live. How am I supposed to live this way? And the conservative boomers just go, ah, well, screw you. And it's like, what do you expect these young people to do? They're going to go to the people who are sitting there going, hey, we know how you feel, and it's unfair that you're treated this way. And see those billionaires? We're going to go take their money and give it to you. Obviously, that's going to be who they're going towards. Not that they're right, not that their plans are intelligent at all, but at least they seem to care. At least they seem to be offering something. What is it about the boomers that they just – are they willfully ignorant to this? Do they just not care? Because it seems like even if it's for their own like ego or whatever, you know, Ted Cruz types – they're going to like kill you if they get back in power. How are they?
Right.
Are they
How do you not see this?
It?
I think there are three things taking place here. One is that most people just don't change their mind about anything after age 25.
Right.
More or less, that's just how it is. More or less, the world that you look or you see when you're young is the world that you always kind of see. To some extent, I think this is even true of Donald Trump. He still fundamentally is a creature of the 1980s when he was arguably at his height. I think he still looks around and thinks it's still the same country, as the same America of the 1980s. And that's not really true anymore. The second thing I think is a product of the conservative movement itself, because we are talking about like boomers in the conservative movement that run a lot of these institutions. When you have an ideology that tells you the single most important thing to do is to pursue your own material, economic, individual self-interest, what kind of people do you think you're going to get into the movement? How can you be surprised that you end up with all these traitors and time servers and people who just want to go into it to be corporate lobbyists, who aren't willing to sacrifice, who aren't willing to work for the constituency, who are basically looking to sell out at the first opportunity? And the broader point is a bit more subtle. People don't like acknowledging that they are benefiting in some sense from a rigged system. But the fact is, if you are part of the asset-owning class in this country, specifically housing, the market is skewed in such a way that you benefit from it. But you don't want to be told that you're benefiting from a skewed system. You want to tell yourself that you earned this, that you got this through hard work, that you pulled yourself up by your bootstraps or whatever else. But yeah, that is true to some extent, but really you were able to buy a place at a time when it was still affordable, and now you have a high inflated home value really out of sheer luck. I mean, certainly, even for like older millennials like myself, buying a house feels like getting the last chopper out of Nam or something. You were just able to do it before COVID made everything go nuts. It's not because I was so amazing and brilliant. It's just because I lucked out. But people don't like acknowledging that a lot of their material success comes from luck. Now, for younger people, and I think this is also true post-COVID, which just destroyed social trust as a society. I mean, I think that one of the big things that really happened to us is that people started looking around and realizing that all of society seemed to be run by a kind of scam. The way you get rich is by knowing people in the government, by getting contracts, by defrauding programs. And the idea of working hard and playing by the rules, I think, has been totally destroyed for the younger generation. And that's not because they have a bad character. It's because the older generations, to some extent, failed us.
Mm. Man, we need to do like a weekly thing with you or something, because everything you're mentioning, I want to delve into for like a couple hours, because I feel like we should and could, and that there's a spiritual underpinning to all of this that you're kind 100%. Of hinting at, that, you know, the idea that you would, you know, refuse to see the truth because it interferes with your own ego. There's something like deeply narcissistic about that. And it actually is humility to be able to say, look, I just got lucky here and I want everybody else to be lucky. And I have like an article to point to for everything that you're talking about. I was going to bring up the Vivek crash out, the yearly tradition now.
It's a yearly tradition. It's a Christmas miracle. This is just what we do now. He's actually ironically answered the question, what is it to be an American? It means celebrating certain holiday traditions like the Christmas tree and going to Christmas mass and having Vivek crash out on the TL. That's part of what it is.
You like the Yule log, you pour the eggnog, and you watch Vivek.
You sit back. And you go on X and watch this Indian dude crash out.
Yeah, and try to jam himself into Heritage America. And I mean, but you know, what he's pointing at is a central sort of conflict in politics for the last decade or so. What is an American? What does it mean? And it's so insulting.
That's the most important question.
It's so insulting to me to have somebody who, he's literally an anchor baby, and I like Vivek. I like 90% of his beliefs. He's wrong about this, and it's insulting, and I don't know how he doesn't understand how insulting it is for real Americans whose families have been here for hundreds of years, who built the country, who have nowhere else to go, who don't benefit from the immigration programs that his family has, to then be told by him that you have the wrong ideas because you're not American. It's absurd. But I had the same thing with people like telling me I shouldn't be friends with, or, you know, shouldn't be on the same side with Charlie Kirk because he's a Zionist. And it's like, how do we get to just that core central American identity that says, hey, we might disagree on stuff, but at the end of the day, me and Charlie Kirk are on the same team, whether we even like it or not. How do we get to that point, or is that what we're going for? How do we deal with this conflict that Vivek's yearly crash out helps to illustrate?
Well, there are a couple big points there. I mean, one thing, obviously, with Charlie Kirk, with the assassination, the big lesson that everybody should have taken away from it, and which people only did for about a second, is that, like, look, you're all the same to these people, and they want to kill you.
Yes.
Many of our little disputes really don't matter to the people who do matter. And yes, the people who do matter are those who are willing to seize state power and use it. Leftists are willing to use power. Right-wingers just talk about power. That's like the big lesson on that. Mm. So we should have a certain sense of charity to the people on our side, even if we disagree with them, because the side that you're on is not really up to you.
Right.
It's up to power, and power is coming after us. As far as the broader question as what is American identity, I think what really bothers a lot of white Americans, especially white Americans of, say, my generation, which was, I think, the last one where you were told that to not be racist is to be colorblind. Mm. And then they changed it later where if you're colorblind, now you actually are racist.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody my age or younger certainly was taught that white identity is a good thing. It's either something that you shouldn't care about at all, or it's something that is actively bad. But the problem is, and so we all grew up believing this, and we all grew up to some extent practicing it. But then you look around and everybody, the same people who tell you that blood and soil nationalism is so bad, they all seem to have a special exemption for the people that they like. Even Dinesh D'Souza crashed out about India a few weeks ago, Mr. Radical Individualism, so he didn't really believe it. Obviously, when it comes to Israel, a lot of the people who say that, well, America is just a question of ideas, suddenly there's a special exception for Israel. Certainly a lot of these people who are in Congress, who are shilling for the interests of illegal immigrants, are very proud to say, I represent this Latin American country, I represent that Latin American country, I represent this constituency, but America is just this marketplace. Right. It's just this land of universal ideals. Anybody can believe in it. And by the way, even if you don't believe in the ideals, we don't get to kick you out. So you don't even, nobody even really believes that either. And I think what Americans are basically a fair people. And I think the reason so many people are reacting against this, and whether that's going to lead to a movement to reclaim American nationalism or whether it's going to lead to maybe a different form of identity altogether, comes down to the fact that everybody seems to be a blood and soil nationalist for the people they actually care about. And that's not America. Whereas we are told we are not allowed to be dedicated to one particular thing. We are not allowed to have a country that belongs to us and only us. But we are supposed to allow everybody else to claim both America and the nation that they really care about. That's unfair on its face. It's a double standard. And even though it's kind of cheap sometimes to be like, imagine if the shoe was on the other foot, people notice double standards. And yeah, people are noticing this. And that's what they're reacting against.
You know, it's literally every day. I feel like my audience has to be sick of it. But every single day I say that where I'm like, I know, we're doing the thing again where we say, imagine if it was the other way around. But it's like these things happen. You know, the big article that is still viral, I mean, it's still at the top of the trending list after like 4 or 5 days, the Compact Magazine article about DEI. And it's like, yeah, how did nobody see how weird and wrong and sick this is that you had people in boardrooms just openly going, yeah, no more white people. And it's like, okay, can we please all imagine if this was the other way around? Because through the decades of propaganda and the, you know, a lifetime of programming, it's been like, it's like there's a little node been implanted in everybody's brain where it changes how they perceive the same thing twice, right? If I say the same thing about black people, no alarm bell goes off. If I say the same thing about white people, the alarm bell goes off. And that's been implanted in people's minds. And I'm trying to surgically remove it, and I can't figure out how. How do we get people to just be able to see things objectively? Because I think that's all it takes. I don't think you need to be a pro-white person. I think if you just look at it objectively, you'll see all of the things that are bad that are going against white people, and you'd be against that if you were objective. How do we get people to take that view?
Well, one of the interesting things about that piece in particular, I think Jeremy Carl on his Substack had a response to it where he pointed out that even that piece understates the problem to some extent.
Yeah.
I mean, really what that piece is about is like liberal whites working in like media and elite fields who suddenly got discriminated against. If you were a conservative American or if you worked in the trades, especially if you're a blue collar American, doom was coming for you decades before.
Right.
And nobody spoke up for you. I mean, remember, like, learn to code. That was what they told you.
Right.
Now it's a problem because these people are being told to learn to code, and not even learn to code because H-1B workers will take your job there too. What really we're talking about when we talk about identity, and this is something that, again, I don't think a lot of us are particularly comfortable with, a lot of it is unchosen. And a lot of it's not just a question of like how you're born or genetics or something like that. Sure, that's part of it. But what I really mean is how power treats you. Like if you are treated as a white person and that determines whether you get to go to a school, whether you get to go to a job, how your colleagues view you, what issues you are and are not allowed to talk about, whether you like it or not, you're white.
Yep.
And what we have in this country now is a very complicated caste system that is gamified by certain protected classes who simultaneously claim to be oppressed, but then use that supposed oppression to get very real and concrete financial and professional benefits over everybody else. And arguably, that's what success in America is determined by more than anything else today, whether you can get yourself classified as one of the protected classes. And we have heard over and over and over again, and then this goes back to what Vivek Ramaswamy said. This is what Tucker Carlson said the other day when he was saying, well, we don't want to go in for white identity. We need to go in for colorblindness, universalism, meritocracy. I mean, this is the default position of the American right, right? I'm sure a lot of the audience are nodding along, being like, yeah, that's all we want. But the problem is the very same people who say these sorts of things always want a special exemption for their group. And you begin to wonder after you've seen this for enough times that did anybody ever really believe in universalism? Did anybody really believe in meritocracy? Because when it comes down to the policy level, we're not actually seeing competition or the most qualified person getting hired. What we're seeing is basically ethnic cartels moving into companies and taking care of their own.
Yep.
And we don't have to like that. Like,
right.
Objectively speaking, if you look at like Pew Research polls, fewer white people think their race matters as a core part of their identity than do other groups. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
But weirdly enough, that means that believing in individualism and universalism is basically a white thing.
Exactly.
As counterintuitive as that sounds. And that also means that if you're in an environment where everybody else is playing the identity politics game and you're not, you're just food for everybody else and your values don't mean very much.
100%. You're talking about patronage networks. Of course, democracy in a multicultural world is just a racial headcount. And I've tried to make the joke before. It never quite lands on X, but exactly what you just said, where if you're a white person who hates white people, well, white people are the only race that hates themselves. So you're ironically doing the thing that makes you, it's like the most white right. thing to do, actually. So if you're against white people,
yeah.
you shouldn't be against white people because only white people are against their own race. It's confusing, but it just shows how nonsensical their whole mindset is. And we've seen the charts where it's like, you know, races grading other races, and white people are the only ones who grade themselves worse or don't like mm-hmm. grade themselves higher. Not even necessarily that it's a good thing that other races do, but they do. And then white people are constantly the ones who are told we're racist. And that's where it really gets me, where it's not just that,
right.
oh, they value themselves and we value ourselves and somehow it's bad. And we don't, put ourselves in the, prime spot. They do, but we're the bad guys. It's not just unequal. It's like completely inverted.
Right. And the problem, of course, is this has real political, not just political consequences. I mean, we all know that. And I think it was Priam Crystal, of all people, who said something along the lines of, we don't have elections anymore. We just have a census. Of
right.
course, I don't think he'd be very favorable if we took that to its logical conclusions in terms of policy. But even something, things that like really would affect your life. Say you go into a courtroom, say you get ensnared in the legal process. Well, what determines whether you're going to win or whether your life is going to be completely destroyed? Well, it tends to be the racial makeup of the jury.
Right.
Polls have shown that every single group has a bias for their own race in these sorts of things, except white people, who have actually something of an anti-white bias because
yeah.
they have this concern with fairness. I think a critical mistake that we make is, just as a matter of history, it was white people who founded this country, who set up the institutions. And when people talk about the rule of law and when people talk about universal principles or civic nationalism, there's this understanding that everybody views the world the same way that we do.
Mm.
And that is not true. The other people do not view the rule of law as a thing that you have to obey because somebody wrote these rules down
yep.
and we all have to play by the same rules. Other people do not agree that that is moral, or they just think it's foolish to behave that way.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We got to go to a quick commercial break. We'll be back in a few minutes with Kevin DeAnna, Amarin.com at...
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula and you like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new products, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else is doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there. The shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Come to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster.
Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision.
Down with the globalists. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I love those J-I-N-G-L-E bells. Oh, those holiday J-I-N-G-L-E bells.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, InfoWars.com. Remember to go to thealexjonesstore.com. You know, everybody knows the reason you call Black Friday Black Friday last weekend of November is when most stores actually go into the black. They're in the red for most of the year. They go into the black at the end of November and make really most of their profit in Christmas time. And that's stores that all they do is sell things. That's all they do. InfoWars and thealexjonesstore.com is a store that sells things and also powers this incredible media empire that we run. So we're under even more of a constraint than most stores. So near the end of the year, if you were watching Alex earlier today, you know, we're still in the red a little bit. We really need your help to make up that shortfall and go into 2026 fully loaded, full tank of gas, ready to hit the ground running. We obviously are putting everything we have into this. All that we ask is that you give us the fuel that we need to continue our operation. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Take advantage of the absolutely mind-blowingly huge sales we have continually at thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself a supplement that can help you to achieve your goals in 2026. Don't let those New Year's resolutions sneak up on you. Make sure that you have the supplementation you need to physically be able to do what you plan to do. TheAlexJonesStore.com. 60% off all products. That sale ends very shortly, so make sure to take advantage of that. And with that, I am again happy to be talking to my guest, Kevin DeAnna, prominent writer and commentator on immigration, identity politics, and American nationalism. He is now hosting a podcast called Identity Politics from American Renaissance. You can find that on Rumble or Odyssey, Identity Politics. Follow him on X at VDareJamesK for daily insights. And again, you know, if you watch War Room and you're listening to Kevin now, you'll not have any problem identifying that we are very firmly on the same wavelength on just about everything, including the creeping lack of morality due to immigration. Business Insider has even identified this from an article a few days ago. United States of fraud. Americans are stealing and committing small scams at an ever-increasing rate. And, you know, there's all these things. It's like, the test scores are collapsing. Trust in society is collapsing. Scams are exploding. Fraud is exploding. And they want you to believe that this is just some sort of bizarre natural phenomenon that the American people have decided on a whim and altogether to just start being more criminal. I think it has a lot more to do with the changing demographics than anything having to do with the change of the American, you know, mindset. Although, if this is the demographic that's coming in, if we start becoming more like a third world country, then Americans are going to have to, you know, change themselves to comport with that. Because if everybody else is screwing each other over and you're not, guess who's going to lose? So, Kevin, what do you make of this phenomenon of just the ever increasing deluge of fraud that we're seeing a lot of times specifically from migrant populations?
Oh, 100%. And a lot of it is also downstream from COVID. I mean, think of all the fraud that came from the PPP program. You see a couple indictments, but I mean, we're talking billions of dollars that we're never going to see again.
Tens of billions.
I mean, it's insane when you look at the scope of this and then you look at what's happening in Minnesota with the Somalis and everything else. The problem, it's twofold. The problem, one, is that we have a legal system that is not set up to deal with groups that have high in-group preference, that do not rat on their kin, that do not believe law enforcement is legitimate, that are going to set up these kinds of scams. There's no way to penetrate these things all the time. I mean, even in Minnesota, you're seeing that because the Somalis have been culpable in all these cases, that is why the Democrats in that state are defending them so fiercely. You actually see people doubling down on saying, and that's why we need more of them. The worse they behave, the more they need to be defended, because that shows how much more oppressed they are. And the second thing, of course, is that to go back to the structure of our economy and everything else, and this goes to immigration in terms of the fact that the rule of law has just been completely abandoned. This even, I hate to sound like a libertarian somewhat here, but this even goes to the question of big government. The only way you can make money at this point is to have some sort of a deal with the state, which means having political connections, which means having deals with contractors, which means having deals with all these sort of ethnic political mafias that run the show in a lot of these states and localities. When you look around and it seems like the only people who are making any money are the people who are running some sort of a scam or have some sort of a connection with the government, it's pretty reasonable to conclude that I better do this too.
Right.
And if you're one of the people who thinks like, well, I believe in a high trust society. I believe in honest dealing in business. I believe in earning your own way. That is not the culture that we live in anymore. And in fact, the system is set up to make sure people like that can no longer succeed.
And isn't that, just terrifying? I don't know. I find that terrifying because I can just see the feedback loop and nobody seems to be trying to interrupt it. And it is a very delicate thing that we have here, a high trust society where you can go and, you know, try to file the paperwork to start your small business and you know that the clerk isn't going to demand an extra $100 bribe on top of it. Like, that can go away so quickly. And then it's just a completely downhill greased slope. There's no coming back from it. So I really worry about that. And you sort of hinted there at another thing that I first heard you say, and I don't know if you came up with it, but it's something that you tweet out a lot, which is the purpose of a system is what it does. When you have a system whose outcome is continually the same thing, even if it's negative, the only reason to maintain that system is because you want that negative consequence. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, especially how it intersects with immigration and Somalians and the high crime rate and all that?
Right,
the purpose of a system is what it does. It's a brilliant statement that can be applied to just about every negative consequence the government or NGOs or industries do now. Explain that statement for us.
Well, I think that a lot of these policies may have started out of naivete or misplaced goodwill, but there comes a certain point where a deliberate refusal to understand constitutes a moral crime. And I think we've reached that point when it comes to the consequences of immigration. When you see over and over and over again these populations being brought in, and they're not being brought in organically because they're good for the economy, we, the taxpayers, are funding these refugee resettlement groups, which then provide them with all of this aid. So one, it's already artificial. But then when you see the ethnic crime networks, when you see the larger street crime problems, when you see the problems of political corruption, when you see all of these horrific cases of illegal immigrants drunk driving, killing Americans, crashing into people, they don't have the right licenses, in many cases even these truck drivers, they don't have car insurance, even medical care, they just go into the hospital, get taken care of and leave, and then we have to foot the bill. When this happens again and again and again, I simply don't believe people who say, well, this is all an unintended consequence. At a certain point, this actually is the intended consequence. And when you think about why that might be, what has been the story of America that you have been taught for longer than we've been alive, 50 years? This country was founded on racism. This country was founded on sexism. This country was founded on the genocide of the American Indians and the exploitation of black slaves. White people kind of have it coming.
Right.
I mean, I remember something that Louis C.K. said, and I think he meant it as a joke, but you begin to question how many of these people don't really mean it as a joke, where he said, life is so good in America, and that's a bad thing. And we need to bring some people here to kind of bring it down to everybody else's level. I think there's a deep-seated guilt that a lot of people feel because we have this society, this very fragile, high-trust society, and they sort of feel we need to deconstruct it in order to make it fair for the rest of the world. And if that means imposing suffering on the larger masses of Americans, well, then that's just what we have to do to be a good person. You see this certainly when it comes to criminal justice, where I think it's very clear that the purpose of the system is what it does. Over and over and over again, we are now seeing people not with just a few arrests, not with just like 10 arrests, but dozens of arrests for serious crimes being let go. And who could expect it? They then kill somebody, or they're being tracked by the government. You know, they've got the monitor on their ankle or whatever else. The government doesn't bother to do it. They go off and kill somebody. And what happens? The judge lets them go. At a certain point, it's not, well, I'm naive. I think they deserve a second chance. I think it's about compassion. I think it's about this, that, or the other thing. No. They see it as something justified against the larger white society that in some way they feel needs to be punished. And if you think that's an extreme way to view the society, go to any history class at any university in the country. Go to any anthropology class. Go to any sociology class. I mean, my red pill was just going to higher education and realizing how much the average college professor hates your guts and wants you to suffer.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, a couple things you've said have reminded me of Orania and the story of Orania. This idea that like, okay, there's a nice, lovely little, you know, community that these people have built. They haven't hurt anybody. They haven't exploited anybody. They didn't colonize anybody's land, but just their existence as a nice example of a well-ordered life is unacceptable to people that aren't in it.
Right.
And so you've got South Africa now threatening to destroy it. And that goes back to what you were talking about, young people growing up now and realizing there's no escape. There's no, oh, if you don't like it, go build your own thing. If you go build your own thing, they will come and destroy that too. So once you accept that and go, okay, running away is not an option. Giving in, submitting and trying to go, okay, all right, we're the bad guys. That's not an option either. There's no bottom to that, you know, pit that you're throwing yourself down. So, you know, a lot of this, I think, comes to a head in Orania, this free state in near South Africa, is sort of this emblem, this icon of the trouble that white people are in the world over. Can you expand on that a little bit and just the idea that, like, there is no escape, so it's time to reformulate the plan here?
One of the most remarkable things when you talk about Irania or you talk about any of these sorts of communities that have had a little carve out, a place of civilization and sanity away from everything going on, is how militant the language against it is, how graphic it is. These people need to be killed. These people need to be raped. We need to inflict this kind of suffering. They're not actually doing anything. And the question has to be, well, why do you even care? Like, I'm accused of being racist and all these things, but it doesn't particularly bother me that there are like dozens of countries in the world where blacks live. Like, I don't care one way or the other what right. they do, like, other than like vaguely wishing them well. But the mere existence of something like this will drive people to homicide. And the key here is they feel righteous yeah. about it, which tells us that there's something else going on here. I think the delusion of egalitarianism as in and of itself a moral good is something that needs to be ripped out by the root. To have a free society is to have an unequal society. And if left to their own devices, people are going to form different kinds of communities, different ways of being that are not going to be equivalent to each other. And some people are going to build societies that are better to live in than other people. And if you want everybody to be equal, you are going to have to destroy those better societies. Africa, of course, is a great example. I think one of the most tragic cases is Rhodesia.
Yep.
Rhodesia was a country, unlike South Africa, did not have apartheid. Rhodesia was a country that in many ways was quite successful, but the United Kingdom and the United States spearheaded an effort to destroy it, made sure that it was not handed over even to a moderate black leader, but it was handed over to Robert Mugabe. I think InfoWars itself has done a great deal of reporting on the years about what happened in Zimbabwe there.
Yep.
And now Zimbabwe is a basket case. Everybody's starving. Life is objectively worse off for blacks as well as for whites. The whites have all been basically genocided. But nobody learned anything from it. Nobody in the United Kingdom or the United States said, hey, guess what? We were wrong about this. Maybe we should have rethought some of the policies. Maybe a system where it leads to objectively worse outcomes for literally everybody was the wrong thing to do. Everybody still feels morally righteous about it. This is the danger, is like we're all Rhodesians now. We're all Iranians now. And there's no point anymore where you can move away and sort of opt out from what's coming. And this is also one of the most important things about the conservative movement. I think the goal of a lot of people in the conservative movement is to get to a certain point, sell out, quite literally sell out, make enough money, move to a suburb somewhere, put up the gated community or the picket fence, and then just sort of ride out the storm. Because one of the points I make over and over again is your average person in the RNC, your average person in the conservative movement, they see what's coming. They know how this movie is going to end. There are no illusions possible anymore, but they don't care. Right. They think they can get eaten last. And what I would say is that the scope of demographic change and the anti-white radicalism that now defines the global left means that no escape is possible. And I think young people understand this.
They're sort of forced to. I mean, they're literally living it every day. I mean, they go to schools where they're minorities and they get treated, worse than you can imagine. And I was actually going to ask that exact question next related to this article from InfoWars. We've seen Rhodesia. We know how this ends. Veteran political analyst warns mass migration complex will destroy Western civilization if MAGA doesn't win. This, of course, is an interview with you. And my question is, how do we intercede? How do we – because we know – like you said, we know how this ends. We can see the trajectory. We have to consciously interfere and change the trajectory that we're going. And it should be easy to us because we should be able to point to examples like Rhodesia and South Africa. A lot of people expect there to be a giant crash. A lot of people are waiting for some sort of solar vortex to take out the electronics. And then we'll get the reset that we're looking for. I see the future as much more like South Africa or Rhodesia, where it's a slow degradation that can go on for decades, but eventually the power's going off, the copper's being ripped out of the power lines, you're, being raided in the middle of the night, you gotta live with barbed wire and automatic machine guns around your house just to survive. And in that case, we still have people in South Africa, they're still Antifa, they're still like leftist.
Right. Right.
Railing against white supremacy. So it's like people need to accept that we cannot just keep going in this direction. There is no bottom to it. We just keep degrading forever. How do we intercede and change our trajectory?
Well, I think we've talked about a lot of blackpilling things. I mean, let's talk about something optimistic. If you had told me 15 years ago that perhaps the greatest beacon of hope in the Western Hemisphere would not be the United States of America, but would be El Salvador, I would have laughed in your face. But right. Here we are. Right. Bukele shows that a single guy with a little bit of willpower actually can turn the entire trajectory of a country around. Now, the reason I think he was able to do what he did in El Salvador, and President Trump has basically been unable to do this sort of thing in the United States, is in many ways our prior success makes it difficult for us to get things done. You talked a little bit before about how our bureaucracy here is relatively non-corrupt. You don't have to, like, pay a bribe to get out of a speeding ticket, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But in many ways, it's because we kind of have a sort of efficient bureaucracy, that we have these professional – we have an independent judiciary. We have these professional institutions that file lawsuits. We have a robust civic society and a free press and all these kinds of things. These are now the things that are getting in the way.
Mm.
These are the things that are preventing us from doing the needed reforms that we all kind of know have to take place. Bukele was able to just go in there and do it.
Right.
Trump does not have the power to do these kinds of things, leaving aside the question of whether he has the willpower. And that's a separate debate right there. But even if he did, he can't just do it the way that he could in El Salvador, because you've got kind of a hollow state. We're at a point now where the state is so vast and the system we live under is so all-encompassing that it is questionable about whether any reform is even possible. And that is where you end up in a truly revolutionary situation, because revolutions occur when everybody knows the reforms that have to take place to sort of save the larger system, but too many people are benefiting from the way things are to allow those reforms to take place. So the stakes just keep getting higher and higher and higher until the whole thing fragments. That is what I think we're moving toward in this country, because I think it's a dangerous assumption to believe that swing voters or young voters are looking for moderate solutions.
Right.
I think they're looking for an extreme of one form or the other, and which way they go is basically up for grabs. It is extremely possible that somebody who was militantly for Trump last time is going to be a socialist next time. Or, frankly, that somebody who is a socialist in the last election is going to be what they call far right next time. It's just a question of who's willing to present the actual solutions to these problems and who is saying, I have the will to do these things, regardless of what the letter of the law says. Because we're at a point now where, let's face it, I mean, I think the rule of law ended about 20 million illegal immigrants ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where you get the anarcho-tyranny that comes about, because our bureaucracy is so efficient and so good at doing what it wants to do, it just never wants to do anything for us. And this goes back to what I think the first thing that we talked about was the fact that young people growing up, young white people growing up especially, understand we don't have a government really anymore. There's this there's this corporate entity out there that has the ability to rob us at will, and we call that the government, but in terms of a group of people that we have empowered with our votes to serve our interest does not exist anymore.
No.
And that is infuriating, because everybody else seems to have this, and they have international groups, and they have, but white people and white Americans in particular, our own government doesn't even support us anymore. And so it's like we're looking to try to create a new replacement for the thing we already have, because the thing we already have has been inverted and is counterproductive at this point. So is there a political solution? I mean, if somebody runs with the will to achieve
right.
this, do you think that's possible here?
Well, I mean, we have to be careful with our terms when people say, like, you know, there is no political solution. Look, it's a political solution if a guy marches on D.C. and sets up a new regime. That's still a political solution. The question is whether it's an electoral solution. The question is whether there's a solution within the system. And I think what is probably going to happen in, like, a lot of these situations is it's going to be a bit of both. There's no scenario where you get, like, a regime change or some sweeping revolutionary thing that doesn't have an impact in the electoral system. These things kind of happen in fits and starts. There's going to be certain judges that are going to need to rule a certain way. There's going to need to be certain elected officials that vote a certain way to put a veneer of legality over the whole thing. Elections do still matter. But what I don't think anybody really believes at this point is that if you elect the right guy, he is capable of solving the problems.
Right.
I think Trump may have been the last gasp for this. And this is not a radical thing to say. Consider every single major left-wing triumph over the last 75 years has not come through winning elections. It's come from judges. It's come from lawsuits. It's coming through NGOs. It's come through non-electoral means. I mean, that's one of the great paradoxes here. The right, philosophically, tends to be a bit more skeptical of democracy But we're the ones who have the masses on our side. Whereas the left, who won't shut up about our democracy, everything they've ever done has been decreed by unelected experts telling us what to do.
That's right.
And so it doesn't strike me as all that irrational that maybe that calculation should be reversed.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point. I'm just trying to run through in my mind now, like, okay, civil rights movement. Yeah, I mean, nobody ran and campaigned on doing that. It was protests and political pressure and propaganda campaign, and that's what brought about the change. So you're exactly right. So how would the right go about mimicking that strategy?
Well, I think one of the things that President Trump is being confronted with over and over again, you see voices on the right urging this, is they're always saying, cross the Rubicon, right? Mm-hmm. Don't go fishing in the Rubicon, cross the Rubicon. What does that mean in concrete terms? I think one of the most clear examples is where you have these judges. The Constitution, of course, never seems to matter when it comes to, like, defending our property, our liberty. The government is remarkably efficient, can do whatever it wants to us. But suddenly, when it's time to deport an illegal immigrant, the Constitution really matters. Yep. The rule of law really matters. The rule of law actually exists to prevent illegal immigrants from being deported. At a certain point, one must recognize that the original constitutional intent is not that the judges get to set policy. And when judges are clearly overstepping their authority and saying you can't get rid of these people, at some point you just have to defy them and let the chips fall where they may. This has happened before. Andrew Jackson's portrait is in the Oval Office put there by Donald Trump. Maybe it's time to take the Jacksonian example. This is not a radical break with American tradition. Certainly the man who has a giant memorial in Washington, D.C., Abraham Lincoln, was not known for his fidelity to constitutional niceties. The biggest problem with the constitutional regime, if you can even call it that we have now, I would say the Constitution hasn't mattered in a very long time, is fundamentally that the founders didn't expect that Congress and to a lesser degree the president would just put up with the judiciary asserting its own powers in this way.
Right.
There's no real check for it within the system besides impeachment. And I think they made a mistake in thinking that people would be so jealous of their own prerogatives and so jealous of their own powers that they wouldn't let judges do these kinds of things. But let's face it, the type of people who are in Congress are not there necessarily to get things done. I mean, what exactly has the Republican Congress done ever since President Trump's election? They're there to time serve. They're there to ultimately get a more lucrative job in the private sector. And increasingly, it seems that congressmen don't actually want to be congressmen. They want to be like us. They want to be influencers.
Yep. No, I think you're exactly right. And they seem, and I sort of get the calculus because not doing anything is a smooth ride. That's a smooth sail right there. If you try to do something,
you don't get in trouble.
It goes badly and they're not going to like it, or it goes well and another group of people's not going to like it. So it is the better move if you're just a worm, you know, if you're a spineless scum like most people in office, of course you're not going to do anything. Man, we could go on and on. I wish we had more time. We really do have to set this up for a monthly at least appearance. Kevin, Dayan, and of course, if you want to see more, you got to go follow Identity Politics on Rumble and Odyssey. You can follow him on X at VDareJamesK. Thank you so much for being here with us today, sir.
No, it's a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
This has been absolutely great. Of course, you can go to Ameren.com, VDare, James K, Kevin Dayan. He's using his real name now. It's time to really seize the moment. This is the Crucible, and we're going to come out of it one way or another. We're going to come out of it more extreme on the other side. I'd rather we be extreme in defense of our actual values, be extreme in defense of America and our people and our families and our heritage, not extreme in tearing it all down. That's what's being decided right now. Thanks for being here with us, folks.
Remember, you fund this operation. I'm very thankful to you, and I'm challenging you, those that have supported, love the products, and those that have never gotten the products, to do your Christmas shopping with us. If you get your orders in by Friday, you're guaranteed to get it way before Christmas anywhere in the United States. Okay, because we ship out like a day after the orders come in, and most of the country gets it in 2 days. The rest three, Hawaii or Alaska, I think it's like four. So get your orders in now. The biggest sale so far, 60% off on the ultramethylene blue, on the Shilajit, on the Irish sea moss, incredible super nutrient compounds that just blow you away. You owe it to yourself to get it. Our information's strong. You know that. The products are just as strong and just as powerful. I'm challenging you to support the broadcast. Those of you who have never gotten a supplement, go to the AlexShilajit.com. Make the decision now. Get our ultramethylene blue. Get our Shilajit. get our bovine colostrum. It's amazing. Experience it, and you're going to be hooked. And then we can continue on the air in a symbiotic relationship. But I need your help. Give yourself the gift of great health, clarity, and focus, and keeping powerful beacon of truth on the air. A 360 total win-win at thealexjonesstore.com. We also have limited edition fundraiser posters to keep us on the air at InfoWarsStore.com. I can't do this without you. You're not key, you're everything.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the CMOS and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.